everything. We need the contract. Because
I
congratulated the ruling party.
Yes, I'm part of it, and it's good that they had a successful conference, because that's why now we are working. If they didn't have the successful conference, we couldn't be here. Yeah, so honorable members, I just want to indicate that as we continue with our meeting, we'll have to let me acknowledge apologies. We had apologies from Mr. Madela, Mr. Kappa, who's gotten a bereavement. We have Mr. Madela, we have called him, must come here because he must be part of this meeting. And so we're courageous, we can start with our meeting. And I'm told that the minister and the team are, the minister and the deputy minister are coming. They'll be joining us. This meeting. You're missing him. Okay. He will be here. But I must indicate that I think it will be important to mention that we're meeting 2018, the year that we're about to wrap up our term as members of parliament. Important that we should look whether we have actually done our best and which areas need to be tightened up and strengthened for us to be able to look back as we conclude this term, that as members of parliament, indeed we have done what was supposed to be done. And we know that our sector is very critical in the economy of South Africa. And we want to welcome the rains that we have received throughout the country, and except the mother city where we are. There's still a lot of drought, and we hope that as we continue, government and relevant authorities will be able to make sure that the issues get given attention that it deserves, such that we don't reach, I was reading the papers that in April we might reach and level where when we open the tap, there will be zero water. But I heard the minister was assuring us that they will do their best working with the city and the province to make sure that we don't reach that level. And one, interestingly, as a sector, would want to put in our mind that where then would be our farmers as the situation is like this in the in Cape Town, and I think Minister will welcome, and we're just welcoming everybody for attending the meeting, and we hope that we'll double our energies towards making sure that we achieve the MCEF as outlined by the government as we started in 2014, and we were just raising the issue of the challenges that is faced by this province of drought, and one asking herself about the poor farmers, how they've been affected by the drought, and the department, as we engage, would have to work very hard in dealing with the mitigation strategies and the adaptation strategies that we told have been submitted to Department of Environment as the leader for climate change. So it's very important that as we analyze and look at the situation, we recognize that we have seen this as they were coming. That's why there was a conference on climate change. Therefore, how we respond is very critical and important as the country on these issues. And that's a word of welcoming you, honorable members. We are now going to allow the department to lead us presenting the second quarter expenditure report, performance report, and we have resolved as this committee that the ARC will be part of the team and will actually look at their audit, how they are going to implement the audit metrics that has been submitted to Auditor General. So I hope they are here, DG. Okay. So that's what we have resolved. So I'm now going to hand it over to DG and your team and Minister, your delegation. Day by day, women are disappearing. Every now and then, gentlemen suit, black suit, and doesn't brighten this room. So we have to look at that, Minister. We get worried day by day. Your team, the colorful faces are disappearing. Welcome, Minister. DG.
Just thanks, Chairperson. Your opening remark has got a challenge, I think, as a country we need to deal with, the issues of climate change and its impact. Because when I look at the dams, there's no water, but there's mud. The question is, what do we do to make sure that we can increase the capacity of storage of water? Because that disaster can also present an opportunity that has to. And also that last week, on Friday, we were in Durban welcoming the Nansen research vessel of Norway on its way along the coast of South Africa to Bengal. One of the areas I was shocked was to see how much dirty water from rivers impact the oceans with plastics and all those things. And I don't think we need to debate those things in looking at climate change broadly. But to coming to the department, I understand and agree with you on the absence. But the absence is not due to the act of the acting DG or myself. It's just that there are also organizational meetings that they are attending. And because they are so important, they are the ones who can present the department in a way that really gives oomph to the issues in question.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair, Honorable Members. The department was requested to come and give a presentation on the organizational performance. And also, there was a request that came from the Portfolio Committee on Friday that there were matters that the Portfolio Committee would have liked to be abreast on. And therefore, it meant that we had to change the presentation to allow for the issues raised by the Portfolio Committee to be also factored in. We would therefore like to apologize for the late submission, but that late submission was not based on the quarter two report, but on the issues that were raised by the Portfolio Committee. And also on the issues that were requested, two issues were not clearly ventilated from a departmental point of view. The first one would have been the work that has been done by the portfolio committee since inception in terms of provincial visits, both from a agriculture, fisheries, and forestry point of view. And that report will be forthcoming, Chair. We apologize for that. And the other one was the work that is done on the MLRA. By those, all the issues that were raised by the portfolio committee were factored in. The outline in terms of the presentation would touch base in terms of quarter two performance of the department. And from there, we will then zoom in on matters that were raised by the portfolio committee. And we will also raise other issues that we think are of importance and need to be raised with this August portfolio committee. We firstly start by raising the six areas under which we report as a department, and all of those would be captured in terms of the reporting framework that we have. And then we move on to look at the issues around the performance. And as the chair, honorable chair, had already indicated, to say that we have got medium-term strategic framework targets that we have had. And each and every time we reflect on these targets, whether we are meeting them or not. Based on the targets that we have and the targets that are measured within the sector, it looks very positive on the sector, although I need to indicate that during the last few quarters, we have lost a few jobs in the sector, massively so. But we think that in terms of, as at quarter two, we are still on target in terms of reaching 300,000 jobs within the sector created between 2014 and 2019. On the 1 million hectares, based on the coagulation of all the inputs that we have had, even from other departments, we are above the set targets. The only issue that we need to raise is in terms of the productivity that we are having. Because in most instances, you would have land that is brought into production. However, not reaching the real targets in terms of the production potential. On the 80,000 smallholder producers that were supported, we have overshot the mark, but mainly because of the support that was given during the drought period during the MTSF. And I think that that would also be applicable to the three provinces where we still experience drought, firstly the Western Cape, parts of the Eastern Cape, and also the Northern Cape. And then on the 152,000 hectares that we wanted to bring under rehabilitation over the MTSF, we are above the target by 49,000 hectares. And then lastly, on the 1.6 million households benefiting from food security and new seating initiatives, we have also done the target with an additional 2 million. Oh, sorry about that. Minister is just correcting me, and rightfully so. I think that I've got to go and visit my optometrist. On the issues around the hectares that we are having, we're still under, but with a clear indication that we have got 18 months just to deal with the 49,000. My apologies, Chair and Honourable Members. Then we come up to the performance of the department on the quotas that we are having. In quarter two, we have broken down the performance, outlining each and every performance area, starting with the Office of the DG and ending up with fisheries management. The overall performance, which is preliminary, the final report would be available tomorrow in terms of the prescript. The department was performing at 61%, which is below what we had targeted. We have also indicated in terms of the work that needed to be done, why didn't we meet those targets, and what are we doing in order to meet those targets, if not already met in quarter three. And that will be something that I'll take members through. Looking at program one, which includes the office of the DG, the office of the CFO, and the office of program planning, monitoring and evaluation, we had in overall 16 targets that were there, and we had a 50% performance in terms of those targets collectively, with 8 being concluded and 8 not being concluded. I'll not talk to the ones that we have achieved. I'll talk to the ones that we have not achieved, because the emphasis needs to go to those. In terms of Program 1, what has not been achieved is the issue around conducting project risk assessment, the review of core department continuity in terms of the ICT disaster recovery plan. There's an issue around the annual assessment of performance of individuals within the department from a corporate services point of view, and then the training of business continuity champions in terms of the ICD disaster recovery plan, DRP. We have not also, in terms of Program 1, achieved the issue around the submission of the integrated agricultural finance policy as stipulated in terms of the plans, but I will talk to it in terms of what was agreed and what has been done since then. And there was also issues around that was not achieved was the key strategic intergovernmental engagements that we have set ourselves to coordinate at different forum, the MINMEC, MINTEC, IGR forum, and INBISO. So I think where we did not do well was around the engagements at MINMEC, but there are reasons in terms of that. There was also an issue around the collection of data, specifically around the poultry participants in terms of Program 2, the managing of surveillance and analysis of information, and then there was also an issue around the community, the compulsory community service of veterinarians, where we set ourselves up a target of 130 vets, but we could only reach 126. On Program 3, there were two targets that were not met. This one's dealt with the quarterly review of the National Food and Nutrition Security Interventions. That meant we dealt with coordination. And then also the target on the National Policy on Comprehensive Producers Development Support, with only one issue that was not met, was that it was not presented to MINMEC as indicated in our APP. On Program 4, we had one target that was not achieved. That was the consultation on the enforcement regulations of the Agri-BEE. And under Program 5, which is the forestry and natural resource management, we had two that were not achieved, the adoption of community resolutions on the entity, and then lastly, the midterm performance monitor report on agricultural land rehabilitation interventions. On Program 6, there were a few that were not achieved. The Aquaculture Development Bill and the allocation in the Abalon and West Coast rock lobster sector. We further went, Chairperson and Honorable Members, to then indicate the cause why these areas, there are 18 areas where we did not achieve. Why didn't we achieve them? And what is the current status in terms of where the department stands? On the finalization, on the issues that were identified under which the cause is the finalization delays, where the issues were really around delays in terms of consultation. We had the issue around the conducting of project risk management, consultation with branches on the master systems plan, the submission on the performance assessments, and the key strategic intergovernmental issues that I had raised. And all of this were due to delays in terms of an engagement. We had indicated on the risk assessment that there will be a report that will be issued in terms of this during this quarter. On the master systems plans, There has been a follow-up that was done in quarter three on this review. On the submission of performance assessments, we have indicated and instituted consequence management for non-compliance because we had set ourselves up a target of 100%. And on MINMEX specifically, we have set ourselves target in terms of consolidation and reporting under the MINMEC because it was very difficult in the third quarter just to hold a MINMEC. There were issues that were attributed to the cause being the finalization delays between the framework, similar to the ones under slide 15. And part of that was the integrated development finance policy. Honorable Chairperson would recall that the portfolio committee had advised that this, instead of coming up with two policy frameworks, we only need one policy framework, and that is the comprehensive development support, producer development support that we need. The integrated agriculture, forestry, and forestry development finance policy is now a chapter in terms of the comprehensive policy, and therefore it has been included there as part and parcel of the chapter. And that chapter was, in terms of the comprehensive development policy, was discussed at MINTEC, and it has been recommended to go to MINMEC. So that chapter has been concluded, and we can safely say that that issue, that chapter, takes care of the issue of this draft integrated development finance policy. On the annual report on the implementation of the sector research, we have tabled this on the 24th of November, so that was concluded, but outside the scope of the second quarter, I need to emphasize. On the midterm performance monitoring report on agricultural land rehabilitation, it was also finalized in quarter three, as will was the continuity training finalized on the business processes in the department. We continue with the main course, which is delays in terms of the finalization. There was an issue around the collection of data on KYD, and the issue here was around the poultry participants, because we have got small-scale holder farmers who are participating here. And this was done, and I think the new report that would be the consolidated one would reflect that this was consolidated within the time frames. There was a matter around the management of the surveillance actions that the department takes, where the issue was raised at provincial level, at MINTEC, to say that provinces have got to come to the table, and a strategy to address this was developed, just strategies to address the coordination aspect, because in most instances, the areas are around coordination of surveillance and provinces reporting on the surveillance. On the issue relating to the compulsory community service for vets, while we did not meet our targets, there is an expectation that we will be able to meet these targets, because there were graduates who did not make it in the 2016-17 who will then be part of this area. And there was also an indication that we might also have compulsory community service for all the foreign students who would be coming back here. This matter I need to raise with the portfolio committee, that there has been a discussion at the South African Veterinary Council that says that maybe in terms of our application, we might be wrong, and we need to revisit whether people who are not sponsored by government who still need to go through a CCS program. It's still a debate, it's never finalized, but it's something that needs to be looked at. But currently, if you're coming into South Africa, there's an expectation that you also have got to undergo the CCS. There was an issue also on the National Food and Nutritional Security Interventions. There was a meeting that was held with provinces on the 30th of November, just to finalize the coordination aspect, and this issue has been dealt with. On the Aquaculture Development Bill, this bill served in January with the DG's cluster, AC cluster, and it was recommended to go forward to Cabinet for approval. there was an issue around the research reports that we have had on the fish stocks. The only issue, and I think that this is almost a repeat of what we had previously reported, that our systems, when it comes just to consolidation of evidence, takes longer to just say that we agree with the finding that this was done, but it's just been consolidated. Still on the finalization of the delays, on the 18 programs that we have outlined, we're talking now to the policy on comprehensive producer development support. We have gone through MINTEC. We just need to take it through to MINMEC and the DG cluster. We cannot take it to the cluster before MINMEC, but we're working very hard to ensure that we reach the target in terms of the 31st of March overall, in terms of the achievement of the target. We also looking forward to finalizing the Agri-BEE compliance regulations that we are having. There is the regulations are out. The only issue that we received from the state law advisor was that instead of going for the regulations, we should just turn them into guidelines for enforcement, and that will also be captured in terms of the status of our issues that we will raise with the portfolio committee today on the transformation within the sector, because we also deal with it there, and I will reserve that so that I can also have an insertion on this matter there. We also have got had an issue around the adoption of community resolution on the establishment of legal entities within the forestry industry, and then we had indicated to the communities that those who have registered must come in and avail to the department what has been registered, and this is where we are. We are still awaiting the communities to respond in terms of those entities that are already registered. On the allocation of rights in the abalone sector, there has been an issue that Minister had raised to say that we will issue later because of the issues that are permeating the abalone and the West Coast rock lobster sectors. And therefore, the decision is that we will only be able to then allocate in the next financial year while we're dealing with the issues that are plaguing these two sectors. On the continuity plans, as I indicated, this was done. And then lastly, the budget has been availed to deal with the business continuity planning. Chairperson, in line with the guidance that we had received from the portfolio committee on also giving us at the closest period so that we don't reflect on a budget from a far off or a distant process, is that as of yesterday, this is what the department's budget looked like. Honourable members would recall that we have got a ceiling that was set by National Treasurer on the compensation of employees' budget, which is 2.1 million. Of that 2.1 million, as of yesterday, we had spent 82% of it. If one looks at the straight line budget, on a 12-month basis, you honourable members would then get to say that on a monthly basis you would need to spend 8.33% of your budget, and therefore in terms of this budget we will be within budget. However, I would also want to caution that in the management of the compensation of employees' budget, there are instances where we currently use overtime in order to compensate for it, because there are other essential services that we need to implement. And therefore, in terms of this budget, we expect that, and we have projected that we may be just underspent by 2 million if at the end of the financial year. But if we do not manage it, we will be in trouble in terms of treasury. On goods and services, we are at 78.8%, but please note that there is 133 million that is already committed for spending, and therefore the available amount that we have is almost 35 million. So the department has got to go on a shoestring budget to end the financial year. And then the others would then follow in terms of the transfers, which is money that we give to all ARC and others in terms of transfers and provinces. I would like to indicate that while this year it looks paling in terms of the budget, through the assistance of the portfolio committee and also through submissions that went through the BRRR, the department has got additional money for the next financial year. To deal with issues around program two and how we deal with those. So we expect that the next financial year would be better in terms of our management. When we deal with the financial statements based on quarter two, I will have to clearly indicate where the issues in terms of the allocations would be. This is per APP that we had reflected, and this is per program. For instance, I'll use one example. So when we talk about the risk management implementation plan that we're implementing, we have got a budget of 2.8 million, and to date, each and every quarter, we almost spend consistently 673,000 just to deal with that element. And we outline each of those in terms of the spending patterns that we are. And therefore, my presentation here today would be emphasizing on areas that would need some work or even youth spending that was done and you know. Honorable members would recognize that on the 2017-18 workplace skills plan, we spent a lot of money in terms of training quarter two to the tune of 3 million. And likewise, we had also spent money in terms of consultation on the bills. There is an indication in terms of program one, which is the administration, that in total, when you look at the budget that was set aside to deal with APPs, that we had almost spent 14% during this particular quarter, with 25 that was supposed to be spent. But honorable members would then recall that there was an element around the ICT DRP that we had to deal with and had to find budgets for. And therefore, in terms of quarter three, the spending would overshoot the 25% that we had set ourselves to do. On program two, we depart in terms of the money that was set aside and to deal with the issues around program two, with emphasis on the regulatory interventions that we are having, where we have got 253 million to deal with border posts, to deal with inspections that we are having. And there has been a consistent spending under that item to indicate that there's additional money. And take into consideration that some of the responsibilities that this program had were shifted to PPCB just to ensure that the department did not overspend during this particular period. The summary of the program two is attained. The program has spent 30% during this particular, the second period. On APPs, I need to say, because not everything that is captured in APPs, not everything that the department does or the program does is captured in APPs. There's other work that is there. So if you go to the summary and find that it doesn't tally, this only relates to the APP. Program 3 has spent 47% during this particular period. And most of the issues you will see, it was during the period where we were making preparations for planting, and therefore most of the money would be used there in terms of line two of the report, and also in terms of the support to smallholders. Program four, which did well in terms of the performance overall, had spent 59% of the money that was allocated. I need to raise this, that the program four has got the international offices that we are having all across, and this is why they spend quite a lot of money, depending on the interest rates and the exchange rates that we are having on the work that they are doing. And then on forestry and natural resource management, We spend 15% of the budget, and then on fisheries, the spending was at 34%, and this spending was mainly towards the Operation Pakisa that deals with aquaculture. There has been an attempt from the department just to give the total for the targets that they were there and the total budget that they were spent overall, which is 31%, 6% above the 25% that we had set ourselves in terms of the straight line budget. But in terms of the self-correcting of the budget, we expected that to be finalized during the quarter. Although, with that provision that I indicated, that in terms of goods and services, without that 35 million, without the 133 that, million that has been committed, we only have got 35 to finish this financial year. We then gave an overall expenditure per program that includes everything that happens within the program, and overall the department spent 24% in quarter two, and then we made a comparison between quarter two and quarter one in terms of the spending, just for the portfolio committee to appreciate the spending patterns within the department. We then raised the reasons in terms of underspending or overspending in terms of the program. Honourable members would recall when we spoke about program one, we related to underspending. And the underspending is that the outlays that we are expecting on the capital works programs of the department that we are awaiting. On program two, the overspending because of the double payment that was done to the ARC for the conditional grants and that was also given to the provinces that we made during this period. On program three, which is food security and agrarian reform, there was payment that was done to the land bank to boost agriculture by supporting smallholder farmers, which is part and parcel of the blended finance options that we are having. And then on program four, there was an issue around the payment of to the land bank on the Agri-B fund. Honourable members would recall that DG Mlengana had suspended this with a view of ensuring that we had a wholesome picture of the blended finance, but the money was sitting in the department. This money has subsequently been transferred to the Agri-B fund just to fund the current programs, with a clear view that once we have got a blended finance option within the department, we will blend all the funds that are with the land bank so that we can have a single fund in line with the policy provisions, as also advised by the committee. On program five, there was a payment in terms of land care and CASP conditional grants, and then on program six, there was a once-off payment in terms of the vessels in Q1, which then led to SQ2 in terms of the areas that were there. If we take quarter one and two, the department at that stage had 50.4% spending, which was on par, just 0.4. Above the spending projections that we have had. We then touch on the issue that was raised by the portfolio committee to receive from the department report on the highly pathogenic avian influenza outbreak in South Africa. I will not repeat what we had said previously, but reflect that the first report that we had was on the 22nd of June 2017. Since then, we would like to reflect that we had 126 locations that tested positive for the highly pathogenic avian influenza. We have given a breakdown in terms of where this the areas affected. For instance, we have got backyard chickens, we have got commercial chickens, we have got hobbyists, avian holders, and also zoos. We have got ostrich farms, and we also have got wild birds. The highest occurrence in terms of this has been on the ostrich farms, and we also have got the outbreaks that were on commercial chicken farms, followed by the outbreaks in wild birds. the table as given on slide 38 also reflects that, but it also breaks it down according to the province which was reported. And therefore, honourable members' attention is drawn to the line that talks to the Western Cape, because of the 126 occurrences that were noted, 93 of those happened in the Western Cape, and that also reflects the industry concentration around the Western Cape, especially the ostrich industry that we are currently having. So, biosecurity measures, if need to be strengthened all across the country, but there's a specific focus that we also need to give to the Western Cape. In terms of the reports, we have used that issue around the 22nd and 19th of June to be the start in terms of where the report started, and we have drawn it over the weeks, just each and every week, to see where did we have the report that came through. From the reports that we have had, we have had the slowdown in terms of the reports that we have had, although we had some few reports that were here in around December in the Western Cape in ostriches. On slide 40, we reflect in terms of a map the reports that we have had on this to reflect where in terms of the wild and hobby birds did we get the reports from. And these reports would reflect that we have had most reports around Gauteng and the Western Cape, and there was also a report that we got from the Eastern Cape on wild birds and hobby birds. And the next one on slide 41 reflects the outbreaks that we have had in ostriches and also poultry houses. So from a commercial point of view, we have had most of those in Gauteng. We had few in Mpumalanga. We had one in the KZN. There were few that were reported in the Free State. And most of those that happened in terms of the 93 that we had indicated, inclusive of the Western Cape, honorable members. Any outbreak of a notifiable disease would have implications in terms of trade of a country. And in terms of this outbreak that we have had, we have also listed the bans that were placed on South Africa due to this outbreak. The European Commission indicated that there was Norway, Iceland, and Switzerland, and this was mainly towards the fresh red-eyed meat, which means ostrich meat, and the essence was that if meat had to be exported, it had to be heat-treated. Just to deal and mitigate against the avian influenza, the transmission of avian influenza. Hong Kong had a ban that was placed 23rd, 13th, and 7th, and the list carries on until Saudi Arabia on the 20th. But each and every of those bans that we have had would specifically indicate which area or commodity or even part would not be allowed. For instance, if we look at Saudi Arabia, the ban that was placed was on live birds, hatching eggs, and wild old chicks. And if you compare it, for instance, with Israel, there was a ban also on genetic material, but they also went on poultry products, and they included eggs. So that is the impact that we have had in terms of the bans that the country received based on the outbreak of avian flu, a highly pathogenic avian flu H5N8 in South Africa. We then dealt with the issues around the vaccination program, which is something that from a perspective of those who are involved in the industry, is something that is a very almost controversial issue in terms of introduction without having the scientific facts. And therefore, from this perspective, as indicated previously, Minister had set up a team that's just dealing with the scientific information just to guide on this process. and that consultation is continuing with the industry. As previously indicated, the Minister's Committee on Budgets had set aside $40 million that was needed for compensation. That money is currently being done in terms of processing these claims. But what we as a department thought was to approach disease control differently. Because in most instances, we would approach it in terms of compensating for the losses. Our view in terms of going to the mean combat going forward is that when we go to the mean combat, we will be asking for money to strengthen biosecurity. To say, if you have got a farm and your biosecurity has not been the best, the money that we get from mean combat would be used just to beef up the biosecurity. That will help us in two ways. One, it would assist the country in terms of dealing with diseases. And secondly, it would be almost a negative incentive in terms of farmers to ensure that they are responsible for the biosecurity on the farms. And this is a very interesting take in terms of how we would like to do it, because in the past we would just deal with compensation. But when you deal with compensation, in most instances, you're not also dealing with ensuring that there is action in terms of dealing with the biosecurity on the farm. That would conclude the issues around the avian influenza. And then we move to the transformation issues. And I would like to indicate this to the portfolio committee that we have divided this issue around transformation into the three subsectors that we have, fisheries, agriculture, and forestry, so that there is a basic understanding of all the areas. What we have realized in terms of our own analysis is that in terms of forestry, there are quite a few areas that we can glean from them that can be used across all the sectors, just to ensure that there is almost an equitable way of dealing with transformation in the sector. I will first dwell on the issue around the fishing sector. And we have used the lever that the department has. We still have got to go and look at other areas in terms of transformation. But what we have used here was the two levers, the lever that we have on the total allowable catch and the total allowable effort. And see, from the historically disadvantaged individuals, in terms of the allocations, how did we attempt to transform the sector? Slide 46 would clearly indicate who owns, who has got a TAC or a TAE in terms of the historically disadvantaged individuals as a proportion of the 100% within the sector. If we look at the Patagonian toothfish, we would realize that we have got almost 53% TAC and TAE, which is held by HDIs. And then Hake Inshore, the 73. Hake Inshore Troll, that has got to do with Seoul, we have got 72%. And that would clearly reflect that in all of the areas that were allocated during that particular period, we have gone above 50% in terms of the allocations. In actual fact, in most instances, we have gone above 60% in terms of those. But for us to say that this is a clear indication of transformation within the sector will be not the whole truth, because the whole truth would be saying within the value chain, what is happening within the fisheries industry, because transformation is not only restricted to the total allowable catch. There are other areas in terms of fishing that would need to be looked at, and that's something that we will look at as a department. On the agriculture sector, I'm raising this, and the department is raising this in a context that there was a presentation that was done by the National Agricultural Marketing Council to the portfolio committee on the performance of the trust, and we didn't want to come and reinvent that presentation that was done, and we would indicate that in terms of that, there were issues that were raised by the portfolio committee in terms of the trust that we are currently dealing with as a department to ensure that they serve the purpose in terms of that transformation. One of those areas was the research that has been done by the trust that has got to also involve the Agricultural Research Council as a government entity that has got to deal with research, and also ensuring that real transformation happens within the trust, and the community groups also assist in terms of them. And we will not talk to the presentation that was done by the National Agricultural Marketing Council, but we will talk to an instrument that we are introducing within the agricultural sector to deal with transformation. And we refer specifically to Section 10 of the BBBE Act that says that we need to look at stakeholder management to come up with a legal framework that would assist that in terms of implementing this. And this has been a major challenge in terms of ensuring that there's transformation. For instance, if you look at the agriculture sector, government is responsible for a lot of levers that can be utilized to deal with agri-BEE, but to date this has not been utilized. And we have come up with enforcement guidelines, and this is the issue that I had raised previously when we were talking about the regulations, that I'll talk to the issue around the enforcement guidelines later. These enforcement guidelines are meant to say, as and when government issues licenses, as we issue permits, any authorization grants, we should be looking, and contracts, we should be looking at agricultural enterprises to say how transformed are we, and maybe also deal with that on a quantum basis to say that if there is no transformation within this, this is the quantum that would be paid in order for us to ensure that there's movement in terms of that. One of the areas that has been worry in terms of the department and the way that we do business has been the issue of accessing international markets, where international markets would only be accessed and the usual companies that has accessed those markets would be the ones that are benefiting. And we are saying if we don't do anything about it, we will perpetually be confronted with a situation where the department would only do work for only a selected few. And without us spreading this cake, we will not be able. And we are of the opinion that these enforcement guidelines would assist us in terms of dealing with them. We will go in terms of saying that these guidelines would determine the qualification criteria for granting these licenses. We will also implement this preferential procurement policy within the framework of the department, and also the sale within the state-owned entities, and then the incentivization of the grants. We still have got to consult on this, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members. We would not say that this is the be-it-all, but from a departmental point of view, we have devised that, and we had legal opinion in terms of how we can implement this. So the way forward in terms of the transformation within agriculture per se is that after obtaining this legal advice, we will go ahead and deal with the issues of the enforcement guidelines and also the codes of good practice within that, and we will share this with the Agri-BEE Sector Council and then consult widely on those. Honourable Chair, Honourable Members, Minister, Deputy Minister, I think one of the examples that can be followed in terms of transformation in the sector would be within the forestry sector. I know that there was a discussion that was here in terms of transformation within the sector with the portfolio committee. But what is good about the forestry sector, I'm not talking to the implementation, I'm talking about the frameworks that have been set and how they collate information in terms of putting this together, is something that upon notification I've taken a consensus that that's something that we need to implement, just to say this is how we can measure transformation. And this will be very clear in terms of the issues that I will raise on forestry. And I'm not saying, I'm not by all means saying that the transformation in the forestry sector, that would be very good for this portfolio committee to note in. I'm just saying the mechanisms that are in place and the frameworks are such that they can be used somewhere else. My apology. The first one, if you look at the certificates that were issued, Agri-BEE status certificates that were issued, they look at different categories. We look at different categories and say medium and large enterprises, qualifying small enterprises, and those that are exempted as micro enterprises for the issuance. Further on, then it's broken down into the medium and large enterprises, the average in terms of what the triple B codes are saying, which is measuring ownership, management control, employment equity, skills development, preferential procurement, enterprise development, and also socioeconomic development. And these are in terms of the average comparison going forward, that maybe in terms of preferential procurement, there has been that element of growth in terms of the sector itself. But there are other areas where we are not making very good progress. For instance, if one looks at the skills development under 2015-16, there was almost a consistent way of dealing with it. While there was an expectation that there would be growth in terms of skill development, there has been an issue in terms of ownership that has dropped from the averages that we have been comparing, which is something that needs to be looked at from that perspective. But in terms of a comparative nature, I think this forms a very good basis to move forward. There's a concerting effort, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members, in terms of looking at black-owned businesses and also looking at black women-owned averages over a period of time. When you look at 2016, there is an element in terms of 19% of black-owned businesses, but of that, 6.62 is owned by women, which is something that needs to be looked at. I'm sorry, the cursor is just not behaving well with me. Then there is also an issue around the issuance of certificate. Over a period of time, there is almost an intermittent way of the issuance of certificates that were received. Excuse me. In terms of the summary, the forestry sector has maintained almost a level 4 triple B status. There has been an increase in terms of the medium and large enterprises, and the smaller ones have maintained a level of three in terms of the triple B, and the micro enterprises have maintained the level 4 status. And I think from my own perspective, Chair, it is something that we will endeavor just to also replicate in the other sectors, just to ensure that there is clear comparison that can be drawn. Honorable Chair and Honorable Members also requested the Department to deal with the issues around the 60 million that was awarded by National Treasury to deal with the monitoring and evaluation of the Comprehensive Agricultural Support Package or program. The breakdown in terms of that money was that 10 million was given for the first year, 20 million for the 2017-18, and then 30 million for 2018-19. What has been one of the areas, and I have got to be upfront around this, excuse me, Honorable Chair, what has been the most intricate issue was how do we integrate the CASP monitoring evaluation provisions within the broader restructuring of the department. And the restructuring of the department has taken longer because we have been dealt with a blow from a treasury's perspective to say, you only have got a ceiling that you can deal with. So what we have done as a department is that we have gone into a retreat in September. We have also had a work streams that would now work on the whole package in terms of the restructuring of the department. Thank you. The whole restructuring of the department. We haven't been able to finalize the issue on the monitoring and evaluation of CASP. But that does not preclude the work that has been done. There has been work that has been done to go and monitor all the projects that have been on CASP and as guided by this portfolio committee. Because of the 468 projects, we have been able to go and do and visit the 96 projects that are there. And we are also utilizing the mechanisms that are in provinces to deal with them. But from an HR perspective, it has been signed off to say that the structure that is needed for the M&E and what is left is for us that then to integrate that system into the departmental structure. And the appreciation would be on how to integrate without then going against the grain from National Treasury that has set a ceiling in terms of our compensation of employees. So we are collectively looking at how do we then utilize almost the supernumeraries within the department just to fill up that M&E unit that would deal with the monitoring and evaluation of CASP. The portfolio committee also requested to get updates in terms of cases that are there within the department. The first one is around the DG of the department. Honorable Minister is addressing this issue of the suspension of the DG. I can safely report that there was a case that the DG had brought against the department to say that he needs to be allowed to resume his functions with the department. It was opposed in court by the minister. And lately, the matter was set to be heard in court in March of this year. So that's how far it is. But in between, there's work that minister is doing, just engaging on this matter of the DG. On the fisheries management case, and this is where I would like to be upfront in terms of the issues that are here. Honorable members would recall that there was a report from Harris and Newpen, and there was also a report from M. Ambassadi that had to deal with the issues that permeated the fisheries sector during the fourth administration. Now, there were two individuals that were highlighted in terms of those reports. And I've been with various people who had previously worked at fisheries and they were responsible as accounting officers of the department, just to retrace the steps of how far we are. Of retracing the steps of how far are we as a department. And what we have found out is that this matter around the two officials was referred to the Hawks for in-depth investigation. Now, the Hawks have been looking at this matter, and I'm reliably informed that we have not received any report that came to say that how far this matter is. And I'm following up on that matter to find from the Hawks what has been the final product, because I need to depart from a notion. I'm having difficulties in terms of just locating the report that comes from the Hawks, because one would need to depart to say that what was the recommendation that came from the Hawks based on the recommendation that came from Newpen, Harris and Newpen, and also what came from M. Ambassador's report. So I'm awaiting that, and I'll feedback in terms of the processes with the portfolio committee once I've got them. On the Avalon, there was a case, December of 2016, where there was a tender that was awarded to a company to sell the Avalon that was with the department at that stage. In January of 2017, Minister ruled against the awarding of the tender and withdrew the responsibility in terms of the sale of that Avalon. And that matter went to court, and the court ruled that the the bid was wrongfully awarded. And therefore, there were people who were fingered in the department to say that they were responsible in terms of the processes of not ensuring that due process was followed. From that perspective, there were four individuals from a department point of view that were highlighted. Of the four individuals, we thought that just to get independence, that the department should not be the ones who are carrying on in terms of looking at this matter. There is a company that's currently dealing with that matter. All the individuals were interviewed. There's only one individual who still has got to submit responses relating to the issues that were raised in the report. And once this has been finalized, we will be able to come back to the portfolio committee. But the preliminary indications are that in terms of supply chain management, there were processes that were not followed within the department, and we are currently following up on that matter, and we are of the opinion that once we have finalized the matter, we'll be able to report back. But there's action that has been taken from a departmental point of view. There was also an issue around NGEGA, where the CEO's salary was increased, and where there was an indication that from a DAF perspective, there was a recommendation that this increase has got to be effected. The department then appointed an advocate who dealt with this matter. I had a meeting with him just before the December recess on how far we are. This report was finalized and sent through to the department. Still needs to be discussed with the principals who are here, the minister and the deputy minister. But in short, it recommends that action is being taken from a CEO perspective and also from a departmental perspective to ensure that there is recovery of funding and also there's a clear line that is distinguished to say the responsibilities from a departmental point of view in terms of the awarding of a higher notch, because there was approvals that were put in place in terms of that. Once this matter is also discussed with the principals, I'll be able to share it with you. And my apologies, because I only started reconvened with the department last week. On NGEGA, which is one area that also the portfolio committee has been at pains to ensure that this is concluded, our apologies, because when we reported at the portfolio committee, we were of the opinion that by the 15th of December 2017, we will have concluded with all the NGEGA processes, specifically the entity, not the farms that are there. One area that we thought is of importance just to note is that we have had meetings with the only surviving board member at NGEGA, to ensure that there is a dissolution of the NGEGA as it exists. We have had discussions with the ARC in terms of the transfer of those officials, all employees except the CFO and the CEO. The CFO and the CEO would be absorbed within the department, and the other employees would then go to the ARC. During November, there was a discussion that we have had with the ARC on a few issues, because we would not want to give the ARC a burden in terms of a few issues that were highlighted. And we also went and got legal opinion on the issues that we did not see eye to eye on with the ARC, which I, from my own perspective, would say that the ARC were right. You would not want to be settled with problems just after ceding. So we have agreed with the ARC, as Minister convened that meeting, I think it was on the 25th, convened the meeting that we have got to conclude on the memorandum of understanding with the ARC and the memorandum of agreement with the ARC, and we have just devised the timelines to say that by the 15th of February, everything will be concluded with the NGEGA transfer to the ARC. And then we will deal from a treasury point of view with all the issues. And therefore, we will not be transferring. We'll be transferring 62 million to the ARC for the compensation and for the work that needs to be done at the center. And the center would be deregistered, become part and parcel of the ARC. and post 15 February we'll be able to report back to the portfolio committee.
This highlights what I've just indicated in terms of the ARC. Honorable Chair also wanted to know of the financial transfers that we get as a department, what is that that we are getting, and can we come and give an account of the money that we get? Firstly, from the Biodiversity International, we get an amount of 324,000 that we are currently using to do conservation work on wild crop relatives, and we have to date spent 210,000 of that. There's still 114,000 that is left. We think that we'll be able to spend it because it's part of the deliverables in terms of the APP, this report. There's money that we are getting from the Australian Centre of International Agricultural Research, where we're basically dealing with the small emerging farmers on beef production. We had 2 million. To date, we have spent 1.3 million and then 922. This project is being implemented through the ARC, and it's towards including improving productivity, and it's going well. And then we had the money that comes from the Department of Environmental Affairs that has got to deal with aquaculture, and that is being reported on the aquaculture programs, and that is 29 million. So this is money that we get from other departments, other entities coming in into the department as transfers, and we have got to report in terms of the framework that are agreed between DI and the department, and also in terms of the Biodiversity International and ICA in terms of the ICA in terms of the issues with Australia. As indicated earlier on, that the review on the MLRA has not yet started, but we need to give a report that there has been the establishment of the Fishing Transformation Council as provided for within the current Act. And as soon as we start the work, then we'll also report on that. The Portfolio Committee had also requested that we deal with the progress report on DAF's audit plan. With essence to deal with the audit matrix, almost similar to what the ARC would also be presenting. We have given the time frames in terms of the engagements on the audit plan, and we have also highlighted where did we have repeat findings, and we have categorized those repeat findings to say on PPME we had 5 repeat findings. We have gone back and looked at these repeat findings to just set a smart criteria in terms of our targets. On food security and agrarian reform, we had 2 repeat findings in terms of the visits to the to the project. We have since gone on an offensive in terms of that, because this year, of the 490 projects, we have visited already 96, with more to come, so we will be above the 13% that is here, and we are instituting that mechanism to also utilize provinces for that monitoring. On the Chief Financial Office, there were areas that we had identified on the understatement of accruals, and also on the invoices that were not paid within 30 days, and those are the issues that we currently dealing with on the audit metrics. Forestry has only one on the biological assets, the calculation, and then corporate services had a few in terms of the 7 in terms of the audit findings, and these are the areas that we are dealing with, and I'm happy that we have brought the chair of the audit committee just to also attest in terms of the work that is being done on the department, or even give his view in terms of how the department is doing in terms of this area of work. The other areas that we had outlined was to say, what are we doing on the audit metrics? We
we look at ensuring that these areas are being dealt with within the 2 months under which they have been finding being done with the department. And then we're dealing also with the internal controls to ensure that this does not recur. We're also providing assurances through the internal audit, which is a component, and we're also doing it, giving reports to the audit committee to ensure that we deal with the audit findings that we've had. There was also an issue that is currently in the media space that we have got to also give highlights to the portfolio committee, and that is the Free the Daily project in the Free State. The department would like to give this indication that this project was approved by the department through its project management process through the National Assessment Panel in the 2013-2014 financial year. However, after that approval was given in July of 2013, there was an issue that was raised by the National Treasury to say this project is supposed to be following the PPP framework, and it was not following the PPP framework, which then meant that the department had to go and ascertain certain issues that were raised by the National Treasury. The department went there to engage with the province, firstly through writing and then in terms of the fiscal engagement on the 13th of August. The letter was written on the 23rd of July, and then on the 13th of August 2013, the department went there. There were a few concerns that the department raised during that particular period, and this was taken with the provincial department, which is also evidenced in terms of the document trail that we are having as a department, to say quite a few issues that were raised. The province could only respond to the issue around the MOU and the feasibility study that was there. And the department decided then and then to say we had no intention to go further and dispense of the 23 million that was outstanding, because the department had approved 53 and had already given 30. But of the 23, the department could not dispense of it because there were concerns around the project already during that particular time. And therefore, the Free State Department of Agriculture came back to the department to say, reconsider the decision that you have that you are taking. This is a very good project that we need to do for the people of Free State, and gave reasons. However, the department did not see it in terms of that, and the department formally withdrew from the project in 2013-14. So, in terms of that, that is where the department is in terms of that program. The funding from our own perspective was from provincial treasury, and from except for the 30 that was previously given, from a departmental point of view, and according to the records that you are having, no money went to the province on this dairy except for the initial approved one. We also need to indicate that there was a forensic audit on this project that was done by National Treasury, but we don't have the report that came from National Treasury on this report, but there was a forensic audit that was done on the project. So in short, the approval from the department on the 2013-14 was for 53 million. When we realized that there were problems, we withheld the 23 million that was supposed to be paid. The province requested that the department goes ahead and give the 23 million, which the department did not do. And since then, there has not been a transfer from the department specifically for this project, that is the Free the Daily. There were other issues that we thought we should bring to the attention of the portfolio committee. One of those is PDAF, which is one of those that the portfolio committee has been on record registered their dissatisfaction in terms of the rate at which the department is growing. We had previously indicated where this was. Previously it was with the NEDLAC. NEDLAC has since done the issue of consultation on the bill, and it was found that there were a few issues where the bill would be contradicting the Constitution and other acts that are there. And we had referred to this matter based on the advice that we got from NEDLAC to the Office of the Chief State Law Advisor, who also confirmed that based on what was received, the bill in that current form would have been found to be constitutionally unsound. And therefore the department has now is engaged in the process to redraft the bill so that we can deal with the issues that have been highlighted. And therefore we would like to indicate that based on our ambition of having the bill here on the 31st of March, SNV states might not realize because of the constitutional issues that we have got to deal with within the bill. But I hope that this bill would be done during the term of this portfolio committee, because quite a lot of work has gone in on that bill. On the other issues, we had the aquaculture development bill. It was also consulted with NEDLAC. There were issues that were raised, the issues dealt with. And this bill was served at the cluster of the DGs. It has now been recommended to go to cabinet for approval, and we hope that it will then be lodged with parliament, and therefore it will come to the portfolio committee. On the policy on comprehensive producer development support, which is also a brainchild that has been discussed at this committee quite a lot of time, we just needed to indicate that we had challenges in terms of the MINMEC consultation. We would hope that MINMEC would consider it around February or so that we can be in time for it to be finalized on the 31st of March 2018, as highlighted in our APP. Chairperson, that would conclude the presentation that we had prepared. With me is a team from the department. I noted the concerns that were raised by the chair in terms of the gender issues in terms of the department. I would like to indicate that there are a few meetings. One of the meetings that is currently taking place is the National Assessment Panel that the department is hosting today. There's also a meeting in terms of the MINCOM that has got to deal with budget, that we also have got to have representation, because one of the issues that we are discussing there is the budget specifically dealing with CASP. So we apologize for it. I would also like to belatedly also apologize for the CFO who could not be here because he has got a child that is sick. And then lastly, I hope that the chairperson, the president and the CEO of the ARC is already here to give the presentation on the ARC per se. He had also tendered an apology to say that he will arrive later, and I hope that he has arrived. Thank you very much, Chair. Thank you, honorable members, Minister and Deputy Minister.
Thank you very much, DG, for the presentation. Honorable members, that was the presentation from the department. I'm now going to ask honorable members to engage with the report, because that is inclusive of those issues that you raised, that you said they must come and brief us, because those are the resolutions of the committee. We made sure that they must actually brief us on the implementation of those issues. I've got Honorable Jaisa, Honorable Stein, Honorable Kosi Ebekulu, Honorable Kruka, Honorable Kruka is okay, all right. Thank you very much, Ofandale, and then Honorable Folse, Honorable Maloyi, Honorable Mapanga. That will be the first batch of the questions. which honorable members, let's raise, if the questions should not be more than five, so that we have the response. Can we take the honorable Jaisa?
Thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson. Firstly, my sincere chat to each and every one of us here. Honorable Chairperson, I just want to get clarity on the issue of this threat project, because I want to check now from the department, why was it so easy for the department now just to fall back, having given such a large amount to the project? Was there no other way of making the follow-ups, because they could see that there was fire burning, they could see by the smoke, so I want to check that you can't do anything now as the National Department, you will see that the things are not going well. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chairperson, and also welcome back to everyone and greetings for the new year. Chair, I want to start off, and I saw that we got a one-sentence report on the DG. I would like to get from the Minister how far are we on that. I think it's not good enough to just hear the Minister is dealing with it. How are we, is there a charge, is there an investigation, is there a conclusion near, or what is going on? I don't think it's just good enough to hear the Minister is dealing with it. The Minister can deal with it the next 5 years. So when are we going to see an end? Then, Chairperson, I also, there was mention made about this preliminary report that will only be final tomorrow. Is that normal practice that we deal with the preliminary report until end of January? And whether the acting DG think anything will change? Because to me, I don't think we're doing very well on the targets, unless we are being told that the preliminary report from today to tomorrow is going to change dramatically into a final report. Chair, I want to also just say that I am not convinced, again, even on what is being said here on the preliminary reports and the discussions that we're seeing under the hectares of underutilized land, the rehabilitation of land, all of those. I would like to find out if we can get some more details on under those two specifically, the underutilized land and the rehabilitation of land with maps, GPS. I feel like driving. In January I didn't do enough driving in December, so to go and visit some of these rehabilitated areas to see what has done. In the meantime, also similar visit some of the boreholes. Again, I've got new information about the boreholes, which I think would be interesting. So I would like to get some more details on that. Then, Chairperson, the impact of the budget, a lot of discussion was about the capping of the salaries of personnel. And I'm getting more and more reports from provinces where people are stuck in offices because there's no money to do their work, to actually go out. There's no money for petrol, there's no money for maintenance of vehicles, all of that. I want to find out from the acting DG what is the impact of the budget constraints. And I'm sure we will get to the ARC. We're going to discuss the ARC, Chairperson, after this. So I'm not asking questions on that. I want to find out what is the impact of the fact that there's no money in the department on the work that needs to happen. Then lastly, for my fifth question, Chairperson, also on the Vrede Dairy Farm. My question is based on other projects like the Vrede Dairy Farm, because Vrede is not the only one. I think Vrede is on the news because of the link to the Guptas. We might have links to the Guptas on other projects, but I've been visiting other projects. I can't remember the name of the one. There's a poultry project in Queenstown. Money is still being pumped in there, although there's not a chicken in sight. The tea plantation there in Makwa, Honourable Minister, last year you said we're now going to rip out the tea and plant avos, I think, or macadamias or something else. There's tea plantations in, there's the Sibidelia orange place. More than 200 million has gone into those places. When can we get a report on that? I don't know. This thing of monitoring and evaluation is not working. Chair, can I ask that we, as this portfolio, get a report from that on every project over the value of 100 million rand that agriculture has funded in this country? I think we will skrik if we see the amounts of money that's been pumped in to projects that there is nothing happening. I would really honestly ask that we get a report of projects that funding has been put in so that we can also help with the monitoring and evaluation, because I don't think it's really working, Chair. And I also want to know, what are we going to get for that 23 million and how much did we give to Frieda? 30. Are we getting it back? Can we at least get a cow? Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chairperson, for the opportunity. And thanks for the presentation by the acting bank DG. Chairperson, I think one of the members then has touched on one of the things that I want to just raise with regards to the learned rehabilitation issues. Chairperson, my understanding was that the department was not alone, the Department of Agriculture was not alone in dealing with rehabilitation. I think Water and Environmental Affairs, I think, was part of dealing with the issue. How much of the time that has been spent by the two departments in dealing with the issues of land rehabilitation? Chairperson, the department, I'm happy, has accepted on its own that there is a decline on involvement of household in agriculture. Chairperson, the my concern is around the fact that there is a lot of land that is lying fallow on the farms that were bought by the Department of Rural Development for the new and upcoming farmers. That land is not utilized properly, resulting in a lot of members of the community who were employed on those farms now sitting at home without work, without a benefit for their families. And in addition to that, on the issues of communal land, there's a lot of land that's lying fallow in communal land that has not been, communities have not been assisted. If I could remember well, there was an allocation of tractors by the department, the national department, on dealing with the issues, as well as provinces, where one day the minister once said the provincial governments have the last the last power to implement whatever that they have. That resulted in the tractor that was provided, or mechanization that was provided by the national department, having disappeared without trace. And you know, the main concern, Chairperson, that we are still going to see a lot of our members of the community from rural areas going to towns or moving from rural areas into towns with the hope of getting employment, which is, in my view, is achieving none, because we will find that people that are living in rural areas, they find themselves building the shacks around towns and townships with the hope of going to town and getting employment, which is not possible, that they do get employed in towns, resulting in increasing squalors instead of our people having been assisted by the department in dealing with communal land for their own benefits. Lastly, Chairperson, the issue of commercial farmers. Chair. On the issue of commercial farmers, we see that our commercial farmers are struggling to produce in order to supply the local people. As a result, they're now focusing on exports. Exporting in order to get an opportunity of competing to run their farms with the countries, with the farmers from other countries who are subsidized. When is our department going to revisit the issue of subsidizing our own commercial farmers, including these new and upcoming smallholder farmers, for our own food safety, food security, to be in good par with other countries? Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson, and thank you for the presentation. On page 46, there's a table there, and it says that percentage of TAC, TAE held by HDI. No, that's really, figures like that are really nice, but I would like to see the numbers of people that are actually impacted by the awarding of those allocations rather than just the percentage of holders. So if the department could give us better figures, we are better able to know if we are making an impact and there is transformation in the fishing sector. That's on page 46, and on page 69, there's no date given as to when there will be a review of the Marine Living Resources Act. No, so this could just be another open-ended goal that we have to change or to address the shortcomings of the Marine Living Resources Act. And then also the Vrede Dairy Farm project. It's been a long time since that project showed problems. Like 5 years later, this department only acts now, and they're only acting because it's in the news. And as the honourable member said, this is just one of the projects that we know of. What about all the other projects? So we need to get an idea as to, these large projects where the department has pumped money into it. And those are the projects, ideally, which should form part of our oversight as a committee, because, we don't want to discover 5 years later, because what I can say is that the members of this committee in the previous parliament has done a very poor job in not exercising oversight on the Dairy Farm project and similar projects. So I don't want people that's going to come after us in the sixth parliament and say, look at all these things. So we need an idea or a table or a list of all the projects, size, and these are the projects. We want to know the mandate of those projects, and those projects should, for this period, be on our oversight agenda so that we can go and we can see if there are other people who are also milking the state and taxpayers. That's our responsibility. And we need that list as soon as possible. A week is a long time, so if in a week we could start getting a list of those projects and we can start working it into our program for this period in terms of oversight. Thank you very much, Chairperson. Hello?
No, thank you, Church. The first one is on that, I'm worried that I'll be discussing with the department a preliminary report, not a final report. And from where I'm sitting, possibilities are that a final report might be different from a preliminary report. And this exercise would have been a futile exercise.
Just the question which I want to pose related to that, when was this report drafted or done, this preliminary? Is it as at October last year, as at January this year, or when? That's the first question. The second question is on slide 60. Slide 60. You know, I would want the DG to speak further on the last bullet. I did not get him exactly what was he saying on the NEHA and DAF officials. Completed recommendations submitted for consideration. Can you just speak to us? Just tell us what's happening there. The other question is on slide 65. You know this NEHA business from 2016. We have been receiving report that says we are doing something about it. We have had meetings and so on and so forth. And there is no progress. And all the time there are dates, extended dates. This time around, I'm not sure, Minister, whether this meeting of the 25th of January was held, because there was this meeting that was supposed to take place today in order just to give progress and so on and so forth. And then they just set up other dates, 15th February and so on. From 2016, we have been receiving the same thing. On this date, we'd have done this and so on. When we meet with you next time, you give us another date. We are meeting again today, you are giving us another date and so on. What is the problem? Why are we unable to finalize this thing? It has been there for more than, 2-3 years and so on. Same resolution of the committee. Act on this thing, let's finalize this thing. But we are not finalizing. And all the time we are told about this engagement. And we are coming up with all these new dates and so on. So I'm just saying, let's finalize this thing. We have spoken about the CEO long time ago, 2 years ago. Up until today, we are still receiving the same story and so on. I'm not happy with this arrangement. We are not doing what we are expected to do. Slide number 69. It is related to what Honorable Paulson was saying. You know, the MLRA, this is a bill of an act of, is it 2008 or when was it? When was it enacted? 98. Or not 2008, 98. Now, in that act talks about Fishing Transformation Council from 1998 to date. Now, if the minister can answer this simple question, when was this Fishing Transformation Council established? If they are now looking at the review, we are only told now that they will look into the review and so on. But since 1998, it was there in the Act that you need to establish the structure or this council and so on. Up until today, they are telling us about the review. They would have done this work many, many years ago. Not last year, many, many years ago. So this one which you are telling us about in this document, when did you establish it, Minister, if you can share with us? The last question is on 78. And I suspect 78 should be the this opinion on the PDELFA from the state law advisors. Did you get the second opinion on this matter? Because, you know, I will tell you, Chair, that more often than not, state law advisors are not necessarily accurate when they deal with these things. You know, we've been talking about this bill for ages. Now this year we are told that state law advisors are saying this bill is not constitutionally sound. It's not constitutionally sound. And you will recall, Chair, I think it's last year or a year before last, we took a decision as this portfolio committee that if the department is not moving, particularly on this bill, we must investigate possibilities of initiating our own bill as a committee. Our own bill. Now, at that time, we were told, no, we are fast-tracking and so on. Now, because elections are next year, we don't have time, we are now told that it is not constitutionally sound. We suggest that even if we can initiate our own bill, we will not have time, because by next year it will be election, and 2 years later we'll be busy with the elections work. So I'm not happy with this arrangement. So for now, Chair, that will be my first set of questions. I'll come back later. I'm respecting your decision that it must be 5 questions per session. Thanks, Chair.
Honorable Matanga.
Thanks, Chairperson. Greetings to everyone. Chairperson, I think I have a concern here in slide 16, where 35 cooperatives were supported with farm and training. There are provinces which are listed here, Chair. And my concern is why Mpumalanga is not part of this program. As we know that Mpumalanga is a province which is situated in deep rural areas where its people are highly dependent in farming. So I think maybe going forward, I'll appreciate if I can see Mpumalanga as part of this program. I thank you.
Honorable Cook,
yes, thank you, Chairperson. The Minister in his opening remarks spoke about the Norwegian vessel that is being contracted for research in South African waters. What happened to our own research vessel? How much will this new research from Norway cost us? And is it cost effective? And then, you know, I'm worried about our own capacity for research, and then local beneficiation of research in our country. Who better knows fish than the fishermen themselves? Why are we getting somebody from outside the country to do our research? That is my first question. Can you please explain your thinking around contracting that vessel? And then I want to move on to the sale of abalone. You know, we have a responsibility as this committee of oversight. I would like to know, are the abalone sold on an open tender or is it a closed tender? Who gets to bid? How is the money paid? How do we assure that we get top dollar for our goods? And then how many tons of abalone is confiscated and sold? And then, you know, when people buy it on tender, they get a permit to export it. How do we make sure that those permits are not misused or reused to export illegal abalone? And then what is the money being used for that comes from the sale of abalone? Is it used and ring-fenced to fight the crime of poaching or to replenish the poached stock? And then talking about poaching, do we as a government understand and know how big the poaching problem is, the poaching of abalone specifically? Do we know and do we have a plan to reduce it? Because, I mean, this, with the reports I'm getting, it's running rife out there. It's really very, very bad. And we need as a government to do something because this, you know, the syndicates are operating and nobody is challenging or stopping them. And then my last question is, does this government and specifically this department have a plan or a response for when day zero arrives that everybody is talking? Are the resources being diverted from other parts of the country to assist the provinces that are having the problems when the taps go off? Are we going to assist the farmers, and how are we going to assist them, and the broader communities that lives around these farms, I mean, those people will not be able to go to water points to collect water. You know, and how are we going to assist them? And I'm very worried about this disaster that is looming. I think if it happens, I mean, I'm only just thinking about people having to queue up. They can't go to work. People are going to misuse it to sell water to people that are unable to go there. There are lots of issues. I mean, we can't let it happen. But if it happens, what are we going to do? I mean, it's not far away. And we've had fair warning of this now, and now what are we going to do? Please, can you inform us what our plans are?
Thank you very much. I think the issue of preliminary report, maybe if you can expand on that, because the terms end in September. So how do you have 4 months not to conclude the report? So if you can get just a clarity. We have not get the feedback on the black commercialization of black farmers. How far is the department is? We have not get the. I didn't hear. Probably I might have missed it. You can just remind me, DG. In as we close 2016. We department had actually promised that as we busy with comprehensive support, a framework, but in the process, I remember the DG was money. There is a money that Treasury has given the department to deal with the agricultural census, such that we establish a baseline, because we are working, we are chasing work, which is a problem. I just want to check how far is that project. I know that when things arise, it will actually tempt us to go out of our term. The term of this government is 2014 to 2019. So, even as we deal with issues, We should not forget that the issues of managing diseases and of plants and animals. I think as we deal with avian influenza, we should actually locate all this, including the droughts and other things. If the department can finalize that strategy on mitigation and adaptation, and be able to to look on this thing holistically, because this thing of chasing these things would not end. And we have our ARC, which is supposed to have that capability to assist in making sure that there is better forecasting, there is better management of diseases and of plants and of animals, which I think, because I'm very worried with the report of avian influenza, because you see it's increasing. I know that we will not control the birds moving around. But in general, what if we have such things? Are we not? Our scientists, are they not working day and night to look at, to manage those? Because if we don't, if there is a situation where we're unable to manage any disease, how are we going to survive as a country? I'm just worried that it's increasing instead of capping it. So And we appreciate that there is money, but looking at the challenge that we have not even been told about the whether we have kept the fall anywhere. Is it gone forever? What's happening? So, and the, even if we celebrate the increment, but the issue is we just need to have a comprehensive. And when we met with the Grain SA. They said they are ready to collaborate as a private sector with the department to develop a comprehensive response strategy on all those things. I think department must move. And this national department, which must actually spearhead the process of establishing a legal framework for the implementers to be able to implement. And if we are not moving with speed, it's a problem, including those issues that were raised by Honorable Maloyi of the PDELFA. And, you know, I was so depressed after the report. That, because, you know, I'm a member of parliament, and if the report comes and says the legislation, working this forum, neglect, reverse the legislation because of constitutional implication, when we have the state lawyer, why the state lawyers are they not supposed to be part of government? They sit somewhere and wait for somebody to say this is not the bill, then they come in. Why do they confirm now? Because they're supposed to confirm it before it goes to outside government. So what is the role of the state law advisor? Because that's where my problem is. And we know, and seated here as members of committee, we know that PDELFA, it might not even reach us because of its implementation might affect the planning of various stakeholders. There is a lot of interest in terms of planning, and I'm very depressed, DG. I'm not sure. I don't have words on PDELFA. The last thing is on the Fred, I think we what is the dairy in Free State? Astina. Yes. We must welcome the report of the box, which is unfortunately they've took long time, but for the fact that there is a work that has been done in that area, which all of us have been very worried. And we're still going to be worried, and we should appreciate that people who now account for the money of government, which is very, very important. So and department's oversight, indeed, it's worrisome because, and treasure in particular, how do you have department says we are not funding this project because of ABCD, there is a problem. Then you have treasury continue to fund the same project. But even if it's the provincial treasury, but the problem is what type, you know, this thing of coordination is a problem. If department has seen that there is a problem in 2013 and say that we are not going to fund this project, then you have treasury allowing it that the provincial department fund the same project. I think it's something that in the level of discussion of government should be discussed if agriculture, even if province wants to fund a project that was a national project. For the fact that it was tabled to yourself, it was a national project, which you say that now we will not continue because there are certain things that are supposed to be done in a procurement. And behind you, Treasury, you said there is a forensic audit from Treasury. But the project continued to pump money and now we are at the stage where we are. So, you have done your job, because it's important that this one woman congratulate the department for having realized that there is a problem, you stop. You've done very well, but you're supposed to have gone further to chase Treasury. How do you allow these things to continue, because we have actually stopped it ourselves? And this is a, I think it's something that government must learn from that process. If it's a legislative loophole, we have to strengthen that. You can't have government that actually, we have one minister who distributes money and treasuries of provinces, even if they are, they've got that mandate, concurrent mandate, but there is a minister who's responsible for all monies of the country. So I'm just worried the way this management of this project and why somebody could have listened to the department, and we must appreciate that you have actually stopped that thing. And we welcome the, as we did with it, with the statement on behalf of the committee, welcome the processes that are unfolding in that space. And we hope that government will be able to get answers of, through the state security. So the last one is this one of the Abalone thing and all those things. I think indeed, DJ, you summarize it. Is it? I was asking myself to say, probably is working when things are still sub judice. So the way you summarize one sentence, please, now tell us the story. what is it that... So you have just summarized it. But can you tell us more about those things? Thank you, teacher. Okay. DM and Minister, I thought he was still going to answer, because there is his question of DG. That one he must respond to. 5 minute break. 5 minutes
okay.
Break? Okay. We had a 5 minute break, Minister, just to, now we are getting response from yourself. You said that it must start by the Minister, that that summary is too summarized. Yes, the issue of DG and other, so it's too summarized. So can we be briefed? Send it to you, Minister.
Thanks, Chatterson. I understand, and we will be compelled to be limited in our response. Charges were laid against the DG after the judgment of the Foreign Affairs DG. The DG took us to court, and we defended our decision. The court judged that there was no agency in the matter, and the date was set for March to hear the real case. But there is a process that is internal to deal with the matter. We will be doing the final processes as to determine when, on the basis that he was still on probation. We have given him the dates. We have informed the DPSA, and we have informed the presidency. So those are issues that we are dealing with. So On the issue of the Avalon sale, remember we reported that after the sale of the Avalon to the tune about 60 pounds, if I'm not mistaken, we became aware that the process was not followed accordingly. There were breaches in terms of our system as to how the Avalon gets sold. Then we opposed the tender that was offered. Then the people who thought they have won took us to court. We won the case in court. The judgment was in our favor. They have appealed, of course, but we know very well that we were correct in doing what we're doing. Now we're dealing with the internal processes of dealing with the people who were cited in the process. That's why we're saying we're left with the one person now who is being interrogated by the independent firm that is dealing with the case to make sure that if everybody has been given a chance to make statements, to explain herself or himself. So once that is done, then the process of internal processes will take its course. I think I've tried, Chairperson, within the limit that I wouldn't like to be seen to have dwelt on areas that are still pending in the court.
Okay. There was a question saying how long would you take?
No, if we were not taken to court, because remember, when we're taken to court, we have now to divert from our own internal processes and to get another process to deal with the matter in court. So we have to take care so that we're not seen to be trembling or undermining the court processes. But we believe that if the case will be in June, in March, we sure by March, unless there are any appeals, we will be able to be having this case resolved. It is in our wish, because this uncertainty creates a problem as well. We are aware of that. But once a person takes you to court, it changes then the parameters of how you are handling the matter. No, I can handle some of the matters. I think on the Fred matter, the least I think we can do is to agree that we will provide the committee with all the major projects, so that in your own time you can be able to, because it is our wish to ensure that, and I would be happy if Honourable Estain can give us the address, if possible, of the one in East London, so that on our own we can make follow-ups, because it is nowish to pump money in a hole is not what I think we are for as a department.
Maybe just to, the list will not help. You know, Minister, the one has discovered that this conditional grant is approved based on the business plan.
Mm. Mm.
So I think that's what we said in the last meeting, that I think it will be better if we have those business plans. When we look at the money that is allocated vis-a-vis the business plan, then it will be very helpful. So it should not be the least, I say.
No.
And it should be business plans of those projects.
I withdraw that. I understand now. I've been informed that it is going to be as you outlined. I agree with you. On tea plantations, this is a complex matter, Madam Speaker. It's complex because these tea plantations are not government plantations. I remember the one in the Eastern Cape. It was under the IDC or something like that. It was the least the provincial government was doing was only to go in and assist with providing funding for payments. And I know the MEC of Eastern Cape was saying that they have found a new way of trying to partner with, so that can find enough funding and also markets. But the other project or the other tea in Matola was that they want to take a portion of the land and convert it to other fruit production, like avocados and others, because the market is good all over in America, and the area is good for that. So I think we will have to check why was Mpumalanga not part of those. So those areas that were projected to be deserving that program. But Meneer Van Dalem, the fault is mainly skin I myself I didn't explain for that like, very clear of what I meant. What I meant is, remember, the research vessel of Norway is the one that trained the bulk of our officials since 1994. And they have allowing us to use the vessel. As I speak, when the vessel was, it docked in Cape Town, because it was doing a very important research closer to the what is it, in the shallow waters, taking, because we've not done that study. That's why it has been a struggle even to quantify what would form a fish basket you give to communities as you deal with small scale fisheries. That study they are doing is very, very important, because they are looking even at the problems that causes the change of the quantity of oxygen that causes washouts, especially of the harmful brooms. They are studying that one of the students who was there is South African. He is doing his PhD and his focus is on that. And we're not paying a cent for that. What we'll get is to get that data free, because they have got an obligation as a major fishing nation. And Norway is the leader in the area of research. Our Africana is now sailing. But remember, for each and every voyage it takes, it doesn't cost you less than 6 million of oil, of petrol or diesel. So that is the reason we also, that if there was this chance then of this vessel, that will pass our waters and our people will be there. We will be able to get this data. We participate. It is going to anchor at the last station is the port of Bengal. So it is doing this work from the Atlantic to the Indian Ocean. So we're not paying a cent. There is no payment. It has relieved us of what we are supposed to do that they are doing. And it gives us our best scientists from the globe. But I can assure you, our scientists were so good. When we're dealing with the debt, that is the debt in the ocean, what it affects us, how do oceans assist human beings with oxygen by absorbing carbon dioxide, all those things, that was done by a South African. So it is a very critical, important program. As a department, we're partnering with them. By the way, they are also paying for the station or the program at Nelson Mandela University, which is dealing with the improvement of patrol systems, payment in terms of sea protection and all other areas. By the way, if you are saying what are we doing to deal with poaching, we are partnering. We have been mandated by SADC to assist Mozambique where the observer station will be, so that we can be able to share information and be able to enhance the protection of our waters from foreign vessels. On the other issue you have raised, I think we have discussed this one. How can we improve the protection of abalone? There are many ways. One of the ones I think I'm fond of is, how do we ensure that we promote fish farming along the coastal area, focusing on abalone hatcheries? Because through those hatcheries, we can plant back I'm not saying plant back for poachers. You plant back to replenish the depleted species, be it for poaching or be it for poaching, was something we fight, and I agreed with you that we need to have a meeting that says to say, how do we use the proceeds from this abalone that has been poached and that has been, because that can, it can unwittingly be one reason of allowing them to poach and then you're consigning, because they do that work for you. And don't think that is, and the other area you have raised is very important, is the issue of, are people not using the slip they get when they pay this abalone to go back and fish, and it's possible. Is one area we need to improve as a department in improving the participation of community. To me, there can be no better surveillance of poaching than the communities along the coastal area, working with the government to make sure that you are able to exploit and explain those who are involved in that. I think the DG will deal with commercialization of black farmers. Let me explain this thing of the department. Maybe, Dr. Maloui, I agree with you. These matters are explained in the 1998 amendment of the MLRA. But when we came in this department, I think in the fifth administration, one of the former members of this committee, Honorable Youngblood, would raise the issue of the African. It was then the issue of the management of the vessels, which was controversial. We were creating problems. We dealt with that. The second task was we had to deal with the commission when we came in of Harris and Nupen, and their report was brought. We went beyond that. Then we got the Emang Basad. That gave us then the 2015-2016 allocations, which we have been put in place. But at all times, we have been stuck with appeals when you have done those allocations. But at least the department were past the situation where we're governing by issuing extensions to companies, because you can transform that. Yes, I agree with you. The issue of the FTC has been outstanding. I can assure you that in December, I signed the letter of appointing the preferred people to stay there. What has been the guidance? We needed people who are not in the fishing industry, people with very critical skills who are in the academia. We have just now sent them the letter to say, since your names have been proposed, we are appointing you. If they agree, we are going to issue a gazette. That can be only 2 weeks. So we're clear on that. And we believe that the FTC will assist us even when we go to the area now of dealing with the amendments. Because the amendments are costly. You have to make sure that you have budgeted for, because you will need legal resources to deal with them. So we may be late, but I can assure you that we are committed to make sure that we work as per the law. With the FTC, I believe we can outline now what is it that we should be doing per sector, as Honorable Paulsa was saying. It doesn't help us to get percentages of what? Because in fisheries, you deal with the basic fishing system. You deal with the issue of processing the fish. You deal with the process of marketing. In most instances, the oncoming people end up only in the initial fishing process. They don't make money in that. So we're going to make sure that we do those things. And let me say that among the issues I've signed on, we have approved the small-scale policy allocations for three provinces, that is Northern Cape, KZN, and Eastern Cape. And I hope that with Northern Cape in Feb, we'll be beginning to make the real allocations. For Eastern Cape and KZN, we will be doing that, I think, by March. We should be through with the process, if not early April. The Western Cape is because some of these processes are linked to the process of the current appeals. So you cannot therefore interfere with the appeals by being seen to be circumventing by issuing those. But our aim is to get back to the Eastern Cape as Western Cape as well. I agree with you that DAF does not work alone in some of these issues. We work with the Department of Environmental Affairs. And in some instances, but the bulk of the funding is from them. The reason is from them. Some of the international organizations do allocate funding, and that funding will be done through that department. It is us now to improve our participation with them so that we can make sure that such a work can be done accordingly, because we need to make sure that when we speak of land degradation, soil degradation as an impact or the result of climate change is mitigated, and semi-desertification of some of the areas due to climate change are brought back to production, and all those things can be done better. The decline on participation by communities, I mean, this morning I was on one radio station to show that people are really keen to go back to farming. I mean, my phone, I made the mistake of giving my number. It was like I was running, where people phone, call in. It was not stopping. I call center, yes. And it shows the interest. But the challenge is the bulk of people have moved in, not only to town, but they've moved in communities closer to town. Therefore, depleted the grazing land for animals. As a result, what used to be land for production, is where animals are grazing. But I can assure, and you cannot put, therefore, and I understand, by the way, when we met at Lekgotla, the president made it clear that we needed to, the two departments are meeting, agriculture, land reform and DTI, to look not only on production but also on processing, to say that if we can make sure that there's fencing for all that land that we put into production, the issue of tractors, the issue of fertilizers, the issue of all the inputs, seeds, I think we can. I can assure you, I mean, there are few individuals who would produce on their own. Yesterday I just plowed one less than a hectare. I paid 300 rands. It is how the guys have put up the money for agriculture. It is difficult for people as individuals to do it. But I think as government, we have agreed that by the time we meet at the government, we should be coming with a comprehensive program that deals with that. The DGs are meeting to deal with that, including the issue of water, its availability. How do we? Because I think that when we deal with water, we should not remove ourselves from some of the problems. Because I believe that if we can protect our water, our rivers, from all sorts of plastics and the rest. But that is one education we need to take. So percentages, I think we will make this report more thoroughly, Honorable Colson, as we say. It must not reflect only what it is doing, but it must reflect the participants and how. But I can assure you the industry is changing gradually. There are new oncoming black people now who are participating in the main business of fishing. So it gives one hope that through the process of engaging, we hope that we'll be able to make that happen. It deals again with this issue of page 69, the amendment. As I'm saying that, the amendment is deal on the radar. But we believe that if we can put the FTC committee in place, manned by such caliber of people, we believe we will be in a position to fast-track transformation, to outline the goals we are putting ourselves for. On the issue of NEHA and officials, again, it goes back to the issue I have referred to, Chairperson. What has happened that we gave this work to an advocate to give us the opinion as to how do we go forward. That opinion was only received in December. The DG was on leave. I was on leave, acting DG. We are going to deal with it as we, and I'm sure very soon we will be meeting. To Honorable Maloy, the meeting to meet on the NEHA was not planned because we were to give a report here. It was, by the way, planned to have set in December, but because of the stringent work we engaged in, we could not meet.
And in that meeting, we agreed to the fact that the issues now have been clarified, because the issues were between our team as well as with ERC. Now we've agreed that by the 15th of Feb, the center, because this is the center we're speaking on, the center will be transferred with all the issues that he has raised. We will look at the report as has been forwarded by the senior advocate. We will look at it thoroughly. We will engage those people it refers to, whose names are appearing, and we'll do what is right, and we'll report promptly. But I can assure you, by March, we should be through, or April, before the new budget comes in with the issue. Already we have agreed that 62, 6.2 million will be transferred to ARC. It is the issue of the 10 farms that I believe that we cannot decide on them, because it involves a number of departments. And we cannot take a decision on our own, and because we're not having an authority over land. But we'll go back to those areas and deal with it. You made the point that commercial farmers are struggling to produce. As a result, they produce for other markets. It is in their interest, by the way. If you give them an option, whether they sell to a South African in rand or they sell to Europe in euros, I mean, they will go for euros. But I agree with you, there should be a balance of what they sell here and what they sell overseas. But I can assure you that whether we can go back to subsidizing farmers, so that question raised, that can only be dealt with the Department of DTI. And I agree, there are many ways you can do that. You can do that maybe by giving them some, like for instance, the way DTI is doing to other companies, like in the auto industry. You may give them a lesser space to pay for either electricity or something, so that they are able to be looped into us. It's one area I think we need to look at going forward. How can we make our farmers have comfort in dealing with the issues? But one area I think I need to close by is this: that the after allocation of land to farmers who have got land is not, I mean, in terms of expertise and the rest, it is in our space. But in terms of funding money, like the recapitalization of the process, it is done by land reform. Maybe in dealing with that matter, we should both be invited as both departments. I agree with you. I do meet with farmers. I could hear that sometimes they struggle to find proper fencing when they get a farm. And without fencing, you can have 12 camps. They become one huge camp if you have not fenced it off. And the control of the grazing then is limited. Those are things I think we can easily deal with, where you get the development of... Because one other area that is challenging farmers is that you buy a farm, there is a dam in the farm. You can use that water until you apply for a water license. Will take longer to be processed. Those are things that are affecting farmers, I mean, in the farming space. Not also downplaying the fact that there is violence within the farming communities. Something I think we need to find a way we engage so that we can isolate the criminals and bring back farming. That is, I think, acting DG and DM will do. Yes, on the issue of the challenges that are faced by the Western Cape province as well as part of the Eastern Cape and Northern Cape, I have been speaking to
the industry players. There was a meeting in December between the industry and the Minister of Water and Sanitation. Unfortunately, we were not invited. But that's not the problem, because some good work was done that day, as I understand. What they are looking for is some funding to ensure that they can transport feed from areas where feed is up to areas that are hardly struck. There is a meeting this afternoon at 2, but unfortunately in Joburg, and none of us will be able to attend that meeting. In that meeting, I'm sure they are looking at measures they can respond to the issue you have raised. What do we do to ensure that the zero day does not come? So I'm not private to say what will be, but I'm sure the outcome thereof will be to give relief to those stricken farmers who cannot feed their animals, as well as other people who may be faced with the problem.
That's one, I think it's Honorable Stein, again, the question of people in the offices. I don't know how, as this department, you can solve that alone, looking at the treasure of the matter. The cuts are higher this year than the last year. And those cuts, usually they would cap and not cut with the personnel, but on activities. So I think it's a very generic problem that cannot be departmental responded to. We are all told to work within what we have, and we don't have what we have, especially understanding of this, on this department, and all other requests and all other decisions and resolutions that have been taken before now and all that. I think out of the best we can do, we'll do it. But until it's resolved at that particular level, I think the last meeting that you attended at International Department, so we were told there that if you think anything you can get, actually the treasurer told us that what I'm getting from you, all of you, nobody gets anything from me. So that's a situation, Chaperson, on this matter of having people not knowing what to do. Because it's indeed, I was talking to somebody from the health that they can't fix ambulances. When they break the ambulances, they stay there for a very long time because there is no money to fix them. That is generic kind of thing. Thanks.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair, Honorable Members, Minister and Deputy Minister. I think the Minister and Deputy Minister have responded to most of the issues that were raised, quite a few that are left for us to raise. And I would like, and Dr. Khoboko, to firstly respond to the issue around the preliminary reports versus the final reports that will be on the table, and the timelines that are prescribed in terms of that work. As requested highly by Honorable Stein and Honorable Maloy, I would also like that Belemane Simudi, who's within the fisheries unit, to respond to the issues that were raised very minimally in terms of the issues around how we procure the tenders around the abalone. That's one area. And then lastly, I will respond to the issues as highlighted. I would like to take them in that order, Chair, then I'll finalize the responses from the department. Thank you.
Honorable Chair, Honorable Members, Honorable Minister DM and Acting DG, colleagues, it is true, Honorable Chair, the concern which is being expressed. This is the outline of how reports are dealt with. Within 30 days after the quarter has ended, we talk of a preliminary report. And secondly, 90 days after the quarter has ended, we talk of a validated. Now, this is a quarter two report, which means from the 31st of December, we were now talking of a validated report. But having said that, Honorable Chair, I would like to say that usually when we bring reports here, whether preliminary or validated, they first go through the approval process in the department. And I would like to make the Chair and Honorable Members that the validated report, as I'm talking to you, has been finalized, but it is still going through the approval process in the department. But it is available. Thanks, Chair.
I was not responded to the question. The question is why it takes you more than 3 months to validate. Who must validate? Maybe if you can respond, who validates this report then?
Thank you, Honorable Chair. What actually happens, Chair, every time we finalize a report, we send it to the DPME. So DPME is our monitor in terms of validating reports. But internally, we also deal with issues of evidence. If the program has said we have achieved these 5 targets, as monitoring and evaluation, we must also make sure that there is related evidence. So sometime at the end of 30 days when we deal with preliminary report, the branch will tell you that I'm still collecting evidence from the provinces. And that is the reason why, in terms of legislation, a provision of 90 days has been given, Honorable Chair, so that we can talk of a validated report. But I can mention to the Chair that DPME is our monitor in terms of validating the reports that we generate. Thanks.
Good afternoon, Honorable Chair, members, Minister, and the Deputy Minister. I will be talking to the process of selling of the confiscated abalone. This is done through a policy. We have a policy that enables us to sell this particular product. However, the policy is currently outdated, and we are in the process of reviewing this policy. And there has been some delay due to some of the legal requirements. For example, the socio-economic impact assessment that has been introduced by the Department of Performance Monitoring and Evaluation last year requires us to go through that process. But in the interim, what we have been doing is that we've been selling the abalone through a closed tender, a closed auction, whereby we invite all the permit holders who have the fish processing establishment and we have the capability of handling of abalone to come and bid for the sale of the abalone. So that's the process that we have been doing. To date, this current financial year, we have sold about 10 tons of dried abalone to the value of about 22 million rands, which is plus minus 5% of our total budget. Regarding the issue of the abuse of the permits, what we normally do, because the product will go to one company with a set quantity, the permit that is issued will be for that particular consignment and that particular quantity in order to minimize any potential risk of people exporting illegal product. Thank you.
Thank you very much, colleagues. Honorable Chair, Honorable Members, there was a question that came from Honorable Njaise on Friday on the work between national and provincial departments. I think one of the areas that is quite stagnant is that the agriculture is a dual competence in terms of the constitution, and therefore the province has got the responsibility in terms of firstly firstly the constitution and second in terms of the use of the equitable chair, share of money to use. But I think the chair has touched on a very pertinent way to say one arm of government cannot do something that was forbidden or prohibited by another portion of government, which is something that is very important in terms of responding to the Friday Daily Person. The minister has responded to the other. Honorable Steyn, the issue on the hectares of land that we have and the maps and the GPS, we will look at it. It might be a bulky document, but we'll look at it and make that submission. On the Honorable Tabekulu, I think the matters that you are raising are correct. If you look at the spend that is done within the Department of Agriculture, Forestry and Fisheries and Environmental Affairs on rehabilitation only, it's also reflected in terms of outcome 10 of the report that comes from both departments, that there's a lot of efforts that happen in there. What is not happening currently, and that is where the two ministers met, was the coordination of the work that needs to be done, because you would find sometimes environmental affairs being in the area and agriculture being in that area. And that's something that the two ministers are just bringing together to ensure that there's cooperation on issues around rehabilitation. There was an issue that Honorable Tabekulu also raised on the on how we can ensure that land that is lying fallow is brought back to production. And I totally agree with your sentiments that you have expressed in terms of land that is land that was redistributed and also land in communal areas. And I think part of the challenges that you are having was in terms of the policy space, which the department is currently trying to just bring together to ensure that there is almost a similar way of approaching the way that you assist farmers within a particular space. Because if you go to KZN, you'll find that a farmer is expected to bring a particular portion of money before government can assist. And in other provinces, it's not that way. So that's something that, in terms of the policy space, we are addressing. The last one, and I think Minister has touched on it, to say subsidies in terms of the farming environment. Minister accompanied Minister Davies to go to the WTO discussions on subsidies in December of this year. And what is quite clear is that South Africa is competing in an environment where the situation is not balanced, where South Africa had done away in terms of our deregulation process that we had in the mid-90s with a lot of subsidies, and we are competing with countries that are now currently with subsidies. The view is for us to now start identifying those areas where we can have subsidies and start using the boxes that are provided for within the WTO to deal with the subsidies. And that would need additional money. And I think that in the current situation, but going forward, we will be recommending certain areas where we can start having subsidies to ensure that it's there. It's an environment that is quite interesting at World Forum to use at how to look at how many countries are using subsidies and how many of those are exporting to South Africa. And when the imports land here, they are even less expensive than we produce it in our country. So that's something that needs to, that we are looking at together with the DGI. There was an issue that was raised by Honorable Maloyi, and I think Minister has responded to Ngega issue. But I would also like to indicate to the committee to say, from a departmental point of view, the frustration that Honorable Maloyi expressed would have been with us if we were not the ones who are leading with this, because there are legal issues that we need to untangle, and each and every time that we think that we have arrived at a situation, there's a legal issue that raises its head. But we are very confident on the 15th of February we'll be able to give a positive response. On FIDALFA, raised by the chair and raised by Honorable Maloyi, I couldn't agree more with you. Because what happens is that when we do the legal framework, we also go to different offices to get legal opinions in terms of what have we drafted and go forward on the issue. And when it came back to say that we will not be able to jump the constitutional test or even pass it, it came as a shock to us. But the issues that were raised, as Honorable Malo indicates, we will subject it to that second opinion. But from my own analysis in terms of the issues that were raised, I thought that there were a few that were valid, but we will get a second opinion just to deal with this issue. But it's equally a frustrating environment because we have been dealing with this for long. And from a departmental point of view, I think that we need to own up and admit that it's one of those areas where we could have moved faster. But we also recognize the dependencies that emanate from other processes outside of the department. Honorable Van Dalen, the responses that you had were raised, but what I would like to touch on after Minister is the importance of research to the fishing industry in South Africa, and that you have emphasized, and I think that's one area that we are concentrating on and ensuring that there is a lot of research that is being done from ourselves so that we are not wholly dependent on research that is generated somewhere else outside of government space. Chair, I think you, in terms of your question, you also provided solutions, and therefore I would like to recognize the solutions that you have provided in terms of the areas. One around the strategy on adaptation and mitigation, which we will also utilize the expertise that you have in terms of the ERC. And one area I think that VM also spoke about was in terms of the budget cuts. When the cuts are done, they also go to the core of where we would like the customer to go, like the ARC, for instance, which is the institution that we use for our research. Because without this particular research, we will forever be trying to look at other areas of which is post-event instead of being proactive. And we are quite aware of the issues that Chair has raised, and we totally agree with you. There is an issue around the agricultural sensor. We have finalized the MOU with SSA, who are going to be doing the agricultural sensors on behalf of the Department of Agriculture, Forestry and Fisheries. The questionnaires, in terms of what needs to be in the questionnaires, has been outlined, and we think that we will be able to take it through, and that's the report on the agricultural sensors. On the 450.
No, maybe, DG, before you proceed, let's allow the minister has requested to be released at 12:30. Minister, you are released. But you see, the problem with your legal team is your legal person. You have a person called legal person in your department. Unfortunately, you have to leave, minister, but the money that you pay everywhere to get legal advice is what you have such a person. It's a problem to this committee. And we don't want to come to a portfolio committee and discuss the performance of individuals because it's your responsibility to assess your officials when they do job, and if they don't do job, they must go. This thing of legal services, we've been raising it for quite some time, Minister. Please deal with it. So, yeah, Minister.
Thank you very much. We take that heartily, and I'm sure I have made we have made a note, we'll meet and look at it because and we have taken note that says we need to take this recommendation on PDELFA for another opinion so that we get a strong opinion and see how we go forward. But I wanted to leave with this that there is a debate that is ongoing on listeriosis, which is a disease that is linked to food, to water, to earth. It may be, in my view, in the area of food processing, if it is not done properly. But listeriosis, according to science, is a contamination-linked disease. That means you may have gone to the loo, or you have touched something and didn't clean your hands, and you touch food. It can be emulated through cooking, but you cannot cook fruit. You can cook anything else. So clean our people should, I mean, there is a tendency of looking at agriculture as the causal or the point of focus of this disease. It is not known. It is more prevalent in the Gauteng,
many people are old people, pregnant women, and children, but it spreads to provinces. But the major contributor is Gauteng. I have been arguing this, that I'm not a scientist, but as far as I have looked around, listeriosis is not caused by any food per se, but it may be linked to all this counted as the originator of it. It is a concern because it is, I think in Gauteng it reached proportions that have not been recorded in the world. Thank you very much, Chairperson.
Thank you, Minister.
Thank you very much, Chair. Chair, on the 450 commercialization of the black farmers, the progress is very good in terms of the reports that we received from provinces on Friday on the work that is being done. The Portfolio Committee would recall that after the pronouncement in the State of the Nation address last year, what we came up with were the guidelines in terms of the commercialization. And then post the guidelines, we also came up with a clear program that we wanted to implement in terms of the commercialization. On Friday, the meeting was looking at the blended finance to look at how can we then deepen the commercialization of black farmers, where we would like to take a portion of CASP just to deal with commercialization from all the provinces that are there. But for the 450 that were pronounced in terms of the president from the 9 provinces, we had reports that the commercialization is proceeding. We would like to just deepen it in terms of the funding that is set aside for that process. That would be administered by the land bank. The meeting in terms of the finalization of the blended finance option would be discussed at the MINMEC, and MINMEC would then guide the process in terms of what percentage would we just set aside in terms of that. But at the moment, all provinces, in terms of the current CASP allocations, are using money for the commercialization of the 50 farmers per province, 450 for the whole nation, as outlined. Chair, I think this one, as Dr. Moepudi comes through on the fall armyworm, he will also be able to attest, and even in line with what you had recommended, that if we don't strengthen the research aspect in terms of any other area, we run the risk of being a reactive country. And therefore, in terms of the fall armyworm, there has been cooperation between the ARC, the industry, and the department, and policy frameworks have been set aside in terms of the report that was also given by Green SA, recognizing the work that is being done on the fall armyworm. The fall armyworm is only an example. Quite a few, like the chair has outlined, that we need to deal with and ensure that we can safeguard the industry that we are having. Thank you very much, Chair. I hope that I've responded to, and my colleagues have responded to, the issues that were raised by honorable members based on our second quarter report, and also based on the issues that were raised by the portfolio committee. And we commit in terms of giving the reports that we committed to, and also additional reports in terms of gauging the progress that has been made since the inception of this committee and their visits to the provinces to date. Thank you, Chair.
Not responded to the increment salary of Mwekha, CEO.
The Chair had indicated that I was very reserved in terms of giving that, and I thought Minister had expanded on it. What we have done is that there was an appointment of Advocate Chabalala to look at the matter with a clear independence, because there was an issue that from a senior management level from within the department, there were approval processes that were put in place that could have led to the increase in the salary of the CEO. In terms of the report, what became evident is that the approval processes were based on almost a self-written motivation that came from the CEO, and under a pretext that still needs to be looked at from a departmental point of view, where it was said that that salary needed to be raised in, because of certain parameters, to say that I've done X, Y, Z in order for the unit to be where it is currently, and therefore I would like to have an increase in terms of the salary, in terms of a retention process that was there. The finding in terms of that was that it was wrong. It was wrong. That was the wrong approach in terms of what happened. Secondly, there are recommendations that are put in terms of that report. One, that there needs to be disciplinary action that's taken against the CEO per se. Two, that the overpayment in terms of the salary that was given needs to be repaid to the department. And then three, the department needs to institute disciplinary action against the senior manager who has been responsible for approving the increases. I think that's basically what I had indicated. But all this needs still to be internalized in terms of the report, because the report was only lodged in January. I still have got to have a discussion with the minister and also with the deputy minister on the findings of that report. Thank you very much.
Okay, thank you very much. We are closing the discussion on these issues. I think what is important on the preliminary report versus validation. So this term must not come here. Don't bring these terms here. They must end in government. So when you report to us, you must give us a factual report on authenticated or validated report. So, and don't bring the term, because we're not going to even have an opportunity. When it's validated, we do not go back to. So please don't bring the terms here. When we say we want the quarter report ends in September, and the leadership of department has to work that, because we give it 3 months, so we can't wait for 9 months for us to get the report. I just thought I must clarify this one. So keep your terms there in government. Here we want a report that is authentic. So thank you very much. I know that members might want to follow up, but this card. Do you have any follow-up that we want to raise? Can we agree that we take ARC so that they can leave, and then because department is still going to present on the SONA, so we can then do that follow-up, because we should not punish them. But the ARC?
Thank you, Chair, Deputy Minister, and Honourable Members. I am going to try and be fairly brief, because some of the initial slides are background information that is familiar to the committee and that has been presented to the committee before. But I think what is key, Chair, is to indicate that we are presenting a report on the state of the audit improvement actions. we are presenting a report that is a state of the audit improvement actions of the ARC as at the 15th of December, because once you hit the 16th of December, it's difficult to get the officials to be working in the organization, so we try to close the operations. But what we're presenting is what has been validated for our internal audit service providers. I have brought with me our acting CFO, Mr. Kagiso Make, the director, maybe you can stand. And then I have also brought with me Dr. Hilton Begotin, who is the senior manager responsible for managing the internal audit service providers in the organization. He's also responsible for planning and risk in the organization. I will skip the initial slides that talked to the background of the information and so on. But key is around, really the fact that we're dealing with the external audit outcomes for financial year 2016-17, which were also presented as part and parcel of the annual reports to the portfolio committee on the 10th and 11th of October. The committee will recall that the AG had shared with the committee their observations around the outcomes of the external audit for the whole portfolio of the agriculture, forestry, and fisheries, which includes both the department and its entities. I won't go into those because those are familiar to the committee as well. I would like to say that it's fine to start with the part where we left off last year on the 11th of October as the ARC when we were presenting the annual report. As a reminder that the audit outcome of the ARC included irregular expenditure, a qualified opinion, and that both in the view of the ARC and in the view of the AG was a regression from prior year performance. It's also important to note that the ARC for 9 consecutive years prior to that did not have a qualified opinion. We had an unqualified audit opinion. The risk areas that had been identified by the Auditor General was around the quality of the submitted financial statements and the financial health of the organization, which was really around the going concern of the status of the organization, whether it had sufficient resources to be considered an organization that can actually continue to function properly. Key around the irregular expenditure was the fact that it was not as a result of non-compliance in terms of supply chain processes. In particular, because we ended up with a deficit, there is a clause which is not in the PFMA but actually in the Agriculture Research Act that requires that the ARC, if it's to incur an over expenditure on its budget, it needs to obtain the approval of the relevant minister responsible for agriculture. In this particular instance, we did not have that specific written approval from the minister, hence our deficit was then qualified as an irregular expenditure. We have since gone through the appropriate processes to get our board to apply its mind to that and to condone such expenditure and then to seek the minister's approval to condone such irregular expenditure for the prior year. So we submitted that to the minister. We've had to also restate the prior year, in figures. The qualified audit was really mainly around the property, plant, and equipment. It was around the trade debtors not recognized and measured in accordance with GRAP procedures, misstatements of financial statements. And you will recall, Chair, we also reported that in large measure, this issue of the qualified opinion was a result of a shift in financial management systems. The ARC was originally established as around 15 different institutions in different parts of the country. Each had its own financial system. However, when ARC was then consolidated into a single organization as a single entity under the Agriculture Research Act, there was never any effort to consolidate that and to rationalize that into a single financial system. So each year we were reporting actually based on data that we had to go and collect manually and consolidate and make it make sense out of it. So 3-4 years ago, we put together an ERP system that actually integrates everything into a central single financial management system. And we completed the installation of the system about 2.5 years ago. So the year that's under audit that we're talking about is the first year after we had completed that. And it turns out there was some data that had been left in the old systems that was missing in terms of financial reporting. Hence, we ended up with the qualified audit opinion. That is why it says systems limitations as one of the bullet points. And I think that's an important point because it has affected, the validity and the quality of the data. We reported, Chair, at the last meeting with the audit committee that we were putting together an audit improvement plan that would be detailed with specific timelines and responsibilities, and that we actually had to make sure that it goes to the audit and risk committee, and that it will also entail reporting to our council, which is our board. As well as including issues around identifying any need for retraining of some of our staff as and when it was needed. We also promised, Chair, if you recall, that we were aiming to complete cleaning up all of these audit improvement, audit improvement plan by the 31st of December 2017. That's what we promised. That's what we reported last year, when we presented the annual report. In terms of the audit improvement plan, basically, as we indicated, we have devised it in such a way that we also had to consult with our internal audit unit, as well as the service providers, as well as with the Auditor General, to get us some sense as to whether some of the key actions that we needed to take would actually work to clean up the audit status of the ARC. As indicated, it was the plan was then approved by the Audit and Risk Committee of the organization and by the Board of the ARC in September. And we then, because of the nature of the work that needed to be done, we also needed to review and revise the scope of work for the year of the internal audit service providers, so that they could focus on validating the actions that we're doing to clean up our findings. In the audit improvement plan that we put together, Chair, comprises a total of about 332 treatment actions that are directly aligned to the 152 findings that were raised by the Auditor General. These treatment actions were developed in order to deal and close out the root causes of the audit findings. Of the 332 treatment action plan actions, 162 actions are directly linked to the areas of qualifications as identified by the AG. With respect to the qualification areas and the nature of the treatment actions with the 162 was to ensure that, amongst others, we made correction to any prior financial year errors, such as, because it actually means, because some data had been missing from prior year, that resulted in some gaps in our financial reporting. Therefore, it means we have to go back 2 years, and in some instances, 3 years, on some of the data on some of those particular projects. This is particularly important for the ARC, because in many respects, most of our projects are not single-year projects. When you're breeding to come up with a new disease-resistant or drought-resistant cultivar, it's not going to happen in 1 year. In many instances, it will happen over several years. So therefore, you need to keep track of how much of the expenditure you've incurred in that particular project every year, and make sure you can continue to make sure that the balances tally up for every quarter and for every year as you keep going. Graphically, Chair, if we were to give you on the next slide, essentially, in terms of the treatment actions in relation to the overall AG findings, You can see in orange is 152 treatment AG findings, and we're actually covering to cover the root causes. It actually means we have to take 332 treatment actions. On the next box there, on box number two, if you were to relate that with in relation to the qualification areas, if you take the 152 AG findings, 60 of those are actually about the qualification specifically. If you relate the treatment actions in relation to the areas of qualification, there is 162 treatment actions and 60 qualification areas. That's just a graphic representation of what I just indicated in the earlier slide. In terms of progress, Chair, as I indicated, this is a report and it's validated by our internal audit service providers as at the 12th to 15th of December. So there's been, since then, there's still been additional work that's been going on. And if you were to ask me the update on this, I would have to go back and look at the report that probably would be coming out today or tomorrow for us to be able to give you from the internal audit for us to be able to give you a much more up to date sense of where we are now. The reports are communicated to myself as the CEO, to the CFO, to the board's audit and risk committee, and to the board, and also shared with the Auditor General. We actually will be sharing the report by Thursday with the latest report. The pie chart below, Chair, indicates that 52 have been completed and validated as of December by the internal audit service providers, and 110 are still outstanding in terms of the areas of qualification. So we are running behind. And we will give you this next slide just gives you a graphic representation of the state of affairs as at December. Now, why is this so? Chair, let me start here with the last bullet point. Our group financial manager and the chief financial officer have since resigned from the ARC as of last year. And hence we have an acting CFO. The post of the CFO has been advertised and the closing date is tomorrow. We are also in the process of recruiting some expert consultants to add to the capacity that's in the organization to help us clean up these particular matters in addition. So part of what we needed to do in order to clean up these particular issues, as I indicated, part of this was around the system. We then had to go get some service providers who could assist us in helping to sort out the functionality of the IT system so that it can consistently collect all the data and deliver the accurate data appropriately, consistently. We've since been able to get the service providers, and hopefully they will have completed that work by the end of this of February. We've reported, Chair, in prior years, and each time I come here around the shortage of funds, and which then has created a limitation on us to recruit some individuals. The support areas, which is really around administration and in finance, have been the one area we haven't paid very strong attention to, because we've been putting a lot of focus on recruiting expert scientists, and hence we have not really been able to have the right quantities of highly skilled people in this particular area. It's also an area that is very competitive in terms of salaries, which makes it very difficult when you're an organization that's got limited resources. So we've had to deal with this in a variety of different ways. But needless, Chair, we've tried to continue doing the work and have had to reassign some of our staff within the various parts of our finance to focus exclusively on cleaning up these audit findings. So we've actually been putting quite a bit of time. We've also engaged with various agencies and government departments, such as National Treasury, the AG, SARS, because some of this includes VAT and tax and stuff like that, as well as companies and intellectual property commission, because some of the findings were about government employees that were doing business with the ARC, which we didn't know. And therefore, some of those businesses we had to go and deal with the companies and intellectual property rights company, commission in order to establish who the directors of some of these service providers are. But getting responses from these government departments and agencies takes time because they don't respond immediately. So that's been part of the challenges. In respect of SARS and National Treasury, in some instances it has been around whether the documentation that is provided to us is valid and is also the same documentation that is provided to the procurement system that is in National Treasury, because you know all agencies, including us, also use that particular system. And that was part of the finding, that there were certain errors. And some entities, their tax clearances had expired, so we had to go back to SARS to also validate that. And that takes a bit of time. In some instances, SARS requires you to go through a particular process before they can allow you to access that information. So it's a little bit tricky in this respect. We reported, Chair, if you recall, that we had three, in particular, major debtors. And that was one of the issues that was raised by the AG, the recoverability of some of the debts. And these three major debtors, when we presented the annual report, was DAF, the Department for Rural Development and Land Reform, as well as the Department for Environmental Affairs. In total, the amount owed was somewhere in the order of about 153 million rand when we presented our annual report last year, if you recall. And the AG had raised concern around our capability to recover those funds. Department of Environmental Affairs has paid the full amount. They've since paid the full amount as a way of an update. So we continue to go and try and recover the funds. Department for Rural Development and Land Reform has paid most of the money. However, the projects are still ongoing, so for some of the incomplete projects, they've refused to honor the full invoice. But they are continuing to make progress payments as and when certain parts of the project are being completed. I think I will leave the response around the payment from DAF. They have since verified and validated in agreement with the ARC that at the minimum about 28 million of that is actually valid debt to the ARC. They will respond as to when they will be able to pay that amount of money. Part of the challenge because of the complexity of the ARC, and let me give you an example. We are required, for example, to have individuals that are working for the state to declare that they're doing business with the ARC. As a science institution, we conduct research and collaborate with universities. Now, if a university is sitting in the sociology department, you wouldn't know anything about what's happening in the biochemistry or the agriculture department of that particular university. So if that individual is sitting on the board of ARC, it may be odd for him to require that individual to declare that he's doing business with ARC when in fact he's not. And it creates those kinds of confusions in some instances. So we found ourselves in those kinds of legal interpretation issues with the AG. So we've had to get some of the experts on issues around accounts and accounting to provide some expert review and technical interpretation of some of the clauses. And then some of the regulations, and they've since provided, I would say, almost all of that. And I think there's only minor issues where there are still slight disagreements with the AG, but those are under discussion with the AG. They're under control. We have continued to review and make adjustments on anything that requires prior years, and I'm now talking going back as far back as 2013-14 financial year, to revise and review all of those financials so that we can make sure that all of those that can, you know, can be updated and can get to the state of, you know, tiling up with the current current financial year. I've already reported on the resignation of the group of the chief financial officer and the group financial manager. We are still confident that we are moving in the right direction. The mood in the organization is positive. For the first 3 to 4 months, people were rather panicking and didn't know what was going on and felt as though, you know, the bottom had fell from under them, because I guess it's the first time in 9 years that people had seen a qualified audit in the organization, and it was rather scary for quite a number of people. It was really around trying to find a way of reassuring those that are doing their jobs properly and then trying to clean up where things were not being done properly. I've indicated that we are trying to also increase some experts on a temporary basis to help us get to where we need to get to as an organization. We are trying to prioritize and continue to do so and fast track closing out whatever findings that actually have a direct control with respect to the audit findings, and then streamlining where we need to streamline certain particular actions. And also to continue to grow the relations in terms of our partnerships with various government departments and agencies, so that when we send an invoice, they're able to also honor them on time and quickly. Of the 110 areas that are still outstanding, our target is to make sure that they're closed out and cleaned up before the 31st of March 2018. Every week, the internal audit service providers conduct a validation to determine whether what we are reporting as having been closed out has actually been closed out. So when the finance people submit the report, then the internal audit service providers go in and audit that, and then I get a report usually the following week to determine to give me assurance that that's been done. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, CEO. Any second question? Quicker before we adjourn for lunch. Honorable Stay, Honorable Mwabe, Honorable Polster.
Thank you, Chairperson, and thank you for the presentation. Chair, my first question might be a bit of a sensitive issue, but I'm going to ask it in any case. Whether there is any need to do a forensic audit, or a request that has been put in the last year or so, because I'm reading on slide 16 the areas of qualification that came from the AEG again, and really is raising a bit of alarm bells. And I've just seen what Capitec Bank that was now also crashing because of what I can just call as creative financing. And sometimes when these kinds of things happen and it's getting a bit tiermekaar and messy and people can't really find where what is going on, it might need a request for, and I'm really not, you know, putting any aspersions or casting aspersions on people. I'm just wondering, reading this, it says unverifiable receivables incorrectly recognized, payables not properly accounted for, or pay, those kinds of things. It just sounds, and I think that was also the reason why it was an unqualified report. So my question is whether you think it is necessary to do a forensic investigation into the financials of the ARC. Then last year I've also asked, and I don't see it as in here, as any chance of selling or leasing of assets to make sure that we get the ARC viable again. I know there's lots of property all over the country and the reasons for that, but whether someone has been looking into that. And then I didn't get a clear, almost maybe my mind slipped at that time, a clear indication on the constraints and challenges, appointments of multiple external service providers, because sometimes that is also extra cost or added cost, whether you still need to make use of those technical experts to assist in the work. And then the question that I wanted to ask when the department is here, what is the impact of the budget cuts on the work that you are supposed to do? I know last year it was already constrained. Can you still do all the work that you are supposed to be doing within the budget constraints currently?
Thank you, Chair. Greetings to the Deputy Minister, the staff, and the honourable members. No, Chair, I only have one question on the issue of expert consultants. You know, we've been crying that a lot of money of department and entities goes to experts, consultants, or consultants. So I want to know really if it's that much difficult to employ someone with the skill that you want on a negotiable salary than engaging the consultants, because they are too expensive. And I doubt that they are much cheaper than the individual who can render that assistance. That's my question, Chair, because it's an outcry, really, the issue of experts who are just milking sometimes the state. Then still, even if they provide those opinion reports, you would still find that there are loopholes or there are problems, or problems are not solved. Thank you.
Honourable Paul, sir.
Thank you, Chairperson. Thank you for the presentation. About the sort of skills that you require, I mean, surely you know what kind of skills you're going to need in the organization. So have you considered maybe, you know, funding university students, using them during vacations, and eventually once they graduate and qualify, that you can recruit them and have them in your organization? That would help address the skills issue. Because I'm sure, I must say, there's, you know, when I see there's a shortage of skills and there are unemployed people who have just left university, and then I just think it's a failure on our part to actually prepare for the future. And then, talking about the future, there was, you, under audit outcomes, you said you want to, there's one of the remedial actions where you said you want to eliminate root causes of these audit failures and findings by the 31st of December. Maybe a bit too soon, but can you tell us what success you've had in that regard? A month later. And also, I noticed you spoke about, you mentioned relationships or extended engagements with key external departments and agencies, and you mentioned agriculture, forestry and fisheries, rural development, land reform, but the Agricultural Research Council is a research intensive and specifically scientific research. So could you tell us more about the relationship between the Department of Science and Technology and their influence in your programs as well? Thank you very much, Chief President.
Okay,
Thank you, Chair. I will try to respond to the questions where I can't. I will request my colleagues to provide additional clarity. The question around unverifiable receipts, is there a need for a forensic audit? We have explored that query both in terms of myself as the CEO with the Audit and Risk Committee, as well as with the board. In if you read the management report of the Auditor General, most of that was around the fact that you have quite a significant number of what we call unknown deposits. So we do a lot of projects, for example, for Department for Rural Development and Land Reform. So each project has a cost center number, and it's linked to with a particular project. So when we send five different invoices, Rural Development pays us one lump sum. They don't send us an advice that we paid for 1, 2, 3, 4 line items. And that creates a problem for us. And then it becomes a difficulty getting a meeting with them or that information that actually specified 30 million was for projects, for the 10 projects under this and this and this, it adds up to this amount. And they were not the only ones. There's quite a number of them. But there are others that are quite good that actually say, we paid you 25 million is for project X, Y, Z, and whatever. And then we're able to quickly reconcile. So it was a part of parcel of that. The other part that is also associated with that was the fact that there were instances where some of the officials were actually not doing their work. They were not reconciling our transactions on a regular basis in order for us to be able to know what has come in and what hasn't come in. We've sorted that part out. And there are reconciliations as we speak on a regular basis. So on the basis of what we looked at together with the Audit and Risk Committee, we didn't deem it necessary at this particular stage to do a forensic audit report, forensic investigation, because there wasn't really any clear indication of any funds missing. Even when we engaged with the AG, there wasn't that kind of telltale signs towards that particular direction. Any chance of selling the ARC assets? I think we have reported to this particular committee before, even when we presented our business plans, and as well as when we presented the annual report, that the ARC has an asset management plan, which talks to how we manage our land and buildings, and the processes that we follow to around which we manage our land and buildings. Some we have identified as core to our research, and some we've identified as supporting our research and development, and others which we may not be using at any particular point in the short term would lease out as a form of income generation, but alternatively for those that we would not need forever are the ones where we've actually taken them through the board to obtain the board's approval, but in order for us to dispose of those kinds of assets, we actually have to take them through, get the approval of the minister with the concurrence of the Minister of Finance. I think in those particular instances, actually, I can give you two examples. One is a school which is adjacent to our campus in Bethlehem. Another one is a school which is adjacent to our campus in Onderstepoort, which we don't need. They're not core to our business. We have obtained the board's approval. And have also requested the minister's approval for us to hand them to Department of Education in those particular instances. So we are, actively exploring different ways in which we can manage much more effectively our assets, including whether we need to sell some of them. I think it's important to note that we have adopted a very conservative and cautious approach with respect to selling land and buildings. Because once you sell the land and buildings, you won't get it back. If you try to get it back, it'll be probably 3 to 10 times more in terms of price. It's better sometimes to lease it, and then when you need to use it 5 years later, you just, get back to it. And that's essentially one of the approaches that we're trying to use as the ARC. There is a question that came around the appointment of technical experts, and these are what we're also calling, consultants as well. I think it's important you realize that this was around expert interpretation around the regulations and the laws between the AG and the ARC. So it's not those kinds of situations where you actually need to employ somebody that might be there consistently forever.
So hence we needed to get that, you know, expert advice on really what does it mean here and what does it mean here. In some instances, you know, and this is not unusual, it's common with, you know, with many organizations, where sometimes you differ around interpreting certain things, both sides need to get technical opinion from other experts, and that's what we mean here, you know, on some of these particular instances. Of course, they are costly, they are not cheap, but it's important to get these, because these technical opinions, because they help you interpret and actually, in fact, sometimes they help you identify where you might have gaps in terms of your business processes, so that you can begin to have the right instruments in place to manage the organization going forward. And that's really part of the parcel of the reasons we were doing that. The skills we require, as I indicated earlier, in large measure, the ARC is a science organization. We have currently 360 students inside the ARC that are training for masters and PhD, being supervised by the ARC. And as and when they graduate, we actually incorporate them into the ARC. We don't necessarily keep all of them, because we are not just training for the ARC, we're actually also training for the sector. However, we have not actually done that for the finance division, because that's a slightly very different kind of unit. We do occasionally get an intern that sometimes is seconded to us by the Department of Agriculture to work, you know, in our finance division, and some of them are seconded by National Treasury to us for short periods of time. But it's not that kind of area where you actually can simply say we're going to have students that are working in a finance division. It's also a very high-risk area. You need to have the people that you know, the people that you can ensure that actually can make sure that our resources are managed properly. I think I indicated in this particular slide, that in terms of the audit outcomes, in terms of eliminating these particular, in terms of our treatment action plans, we've completed 52, so we've succeeded in cleaning out 52 of those. There's still 110 that are outstanding. We are working very hard. Some people are now working overtime to clean out the remaining 110, and our aim is to make sure that these are sorted out by 31st of March 2018. We have a fairly strong relationship and a very good working relationship with the Department of Science and Technology. I believe that's what the question was about. We hope that that particular relationship will continue, because it also helps us in achieving certain national priorities and objectives. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, CEO, for the response. We want to appreciate the report, and we hope when we meet in the next quarter, we get a clear outcomes of what you have put in place. And good luck, and thank you very much for coming. Honourable members, 1:30, who adjourn, come back at 2:30. No lunch, unfortunately. So let's go to the dining restaurant. Thank you.
Thank you.